committee refused to see the National Commissioner because she hasn't been properly introduced to us all. And I just think in order to get a proper relationship with the National Commissioner, I think it is appropriate, and I think it is it leads to a good relationship if this committee is appraised of the reasons for the appointment of the commissioner ahead of that appointment taking place.
Any other comments from any? There's clarity. We just need to very briefly. We don't want to tie our time. Just comments on this one so that we can take it forward. Are there people that want to speak to it? I've noted, besides Mr. Madassa. Anybody else? Mr. Madassa, thanks.
Of being kept up to date with the development with the commission. However, all I'm saying is that, arising from his answer, is that seeing that from a program point of view, we have no opportunity. And there's nothing that prevents the minister from going ahead with appointment. But I think to answer his concerns, the minister must then introduce the person if the appointment is done and is successful.
We've got literally next week, because we're going to recess on the 26th. We've got the budget next week. Maybe I should also indicate that whilst I agree that there is a need for us to interact with the minister around the commissioner's position, but the powers that be, for the reasons that have been given to me and Cindy about the changes on the 25th or the 24th, took the decision that they've taken. Maybe a way forward would be that, and I'm not sure that that there is a hard and fast commitment that new person will be appointed on the 25th. I know it was a desire of the minister that the person would be appointed by the 1st of April. I'm not sure that it is indeed the case. If it does happen, whilst we're away, I then would imagine that we must have a meeting as soon as we get back, or at least introduce the new person, where we can then raise some of these other concerns as soon as she comes. As soon as we get back. I don't think it's going to be feasible for us to have an emergency meeting just on this matter between now and the 21st.
No.
So my own proposal is that we... I think there's a Cindy. I think there's this item. I'm not sure what your program says for the first meetings when we get back, but I think we would need to indicate that this becomes our priority for when we get back. The agenda item that we're going to have been discussed on the 23rd or 24th will be the first agenda items when we get back, and I think that's the most pragmatic way that we're going to get out of this impasse. Can you leave it at that? Thank you very much. Mpo, you had indicated, the agenda indicates that at 9:45 you'd be through with your meeting, so maybe we've taken a few of your minutes, but we're going to stick to that time, otherwise we won't have time to engage with the department. You've got half an hour, sir, together with discussion. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Firstly, I must apologize to members. This is budget vote 20, not 18 as stipulated in the document. But of course, there were other changes that were made to the document, but members were given a note in terms of what are the changes and where, but the changes were effective to the original document then. This is just a summary of the document which was given to members, just to touch on issues, highlight issues that are important for this budget. The presentation chair will touch on the policy priorities as outlined by DCS for 2010-2011, as well as performance and service delivery areas. And finally, the brief information on the 2010 budget. Among other things, the department indicated three priority areas for 2010-11, which is intensify the fight against crime and corruption. Of course, we agree this is in line with the key priorities of government as outlined in the 2010 State of the Nation Address. In order to achieve this, Chair, I would believe that DCS would need to prioritize and put more money, particularly into rehabilitation programs, in order to win this fight against crime and corruption. Secondly, they spoke about corrections as a societal responsibility. And lastly, improvement or improved center-level service delivery on core mandates of the department. Particularly under this policy priority, DCS focuses on the improving service, particularly at correctional center level, including services for rehabilitation and integration of inmates, of which the central component of it is the development of a correctional sentence plan. And of course, in a number of meetings, particularly last week, we made emphasis to say that the target, particularly for correctional sentence plan, is too low. Maybe we need to engage the department, particularly on that aspect. Performance and service delivery information. You would remember that over the years, a number of policy priorities have been identified by DCS, and some of them are still ongoing. Just the document tried to give an update in terms of this priority, policy priorities, where are they, how far, and so on and so forth. It's, among others, it's 7-day establishment and OSD, as we all know, management and detention of awaiting trial detainees, and infrastructure development. Going to the DCS budget in context, the table there indicates DCS budget allocation vis-a-vis the cluster allocation, and particularly in the context of the total budget of government. You'd see that DCS has been allocated 15.1 billion, which constitutes 14% of the cluster, because for this coming financial year, the justice cluster has been allocated 108 billion rand. You could see in terms of other departments or other sister departments within the cluster, what are the allocation and so on and so forth. Program one is the administration under Department of Correctional Services, which is on page 7. You could see that administration has been allocated almost 4 billion, vis-a-vis 3.4 billion, which was allocated in 2009-10. The increase there constitutes 14% from what has been allocated in the last financial year. You'd be aware that administration is the second largest program in terms of allocation of the budget, and it takes 26.3% of the total DCS budget. Chair, I've said that it's a concern that DCS has been relying on consultant services, especially particularly under this program, and I think we've noted from different speakers last week where they spoke about consultancy in terms of computer system, legal services, and so on and so forth. Program two, which is security. Chair, security has been allocated 5 billion vis-a-vis 4.9 billion, which was allocated in 2009-10. At least we've seen the increase here is 3.66% as compared to the increase as compared with last 2009 and 10 vis-a-vis 2008 and 9. So they've received a slight increase But still, security takes a lot of the budget of the department. Hence, I said this is the largest program in terms of allocation, and it takes 34% of the total DCS budget, of which 98% of the allocation goes to compensation of employees. And I believe that we still remember that last week with other stakeholders, it indicated that the department budget, the total budget, 70% of the total budget goes to compensation of employees. And the judicial inspectorate indicated that out of every one rand allocated to DCS, 70 cents goes to compensation of employees, and only 30 cents goes to offenders or programs for offenders. Security still takes a huge budget of DCS, despite the fact that escapes have been reduced. And Chair, you should be aware that according to the white paper, it says putting rehabilitation at the center of DCS activities. But yeah, with this budget, we could see that instead of putting rehabilitation, we are putting security in the center of DCS activities. Program 3, which is corrections, has been allocated 1.5 billion vis-a-vis 1.2 billion, which has been allocated in 2009 and 2010, of which the increase constitutes, it has been increased by 27.38%. It means an increase of 340 million in nominal terms has been added to this budget if you compare it with 2009 and 2010. And it only takes 10.5% of the total DCS budget. Just trying to look at the history of this particular program, one could see that since 2006 and 2007, this program never took more than 10% of the DCS budget. One could say this program has never been taken serious by the department. It's only now that we've seen a slight increase, which takes 10.5% of the budget. And of course, also in this program, 99.3% goes to compensation of employees. And then, as indicated by DCS, the increase, particularly in this program, amongst others, would go to OSD, 7-day establishment, and also the salary adjustment. And according to strategic plan, DCS intends to install video postponement in 14 correctional facilities, implement bail protocol, compile sentence plan, and remove child remand detainees to secure care facilities. Under care program, we could see that an amount of 1.5 billion has been allocated vis-a-vis 1.58 billion. We could see there's a decrease of 5.6%. In monetary terms, it means an amount of 80.1 million has been taken away from this particular program. And care program only takes 10% of the total allocation of DCS. One would wonder as to whether DCS will be able to administer ERVs to offenders, will be able to administer issues of 3 meals a day, and other nutritional programs and healthcare services, whether they'll be able to provide those services with a decrease in this particular budget. And you'd be aware that 47% of this allocation goes to compensation of employees. And then increasing this expenditure for additional remuneration for healthcare workers in line with OSD and costs for salary adjustment. But one wonders whether, Chair, if we could see that there's a decrease in this particular allocation. But then now they're saying an increase in the expenditure is for additional remuneration. But whereas they've decreased the budget, you know, I think maybe we need to get clarity around that. If they're saying the want to increase expenditure for additional remuneration for healthcare workers and OSD, what informed the decrease in the allocation for this particular budget? Development Chairperson has been allocated 526 million vis-a-vis 438 million, which was allocated in 2009 and 2010. This program constitutes, or an increase in this program constitutes, 20.18%. If you look from the allocation of 2009 and 10, it's an increase of 20.18%, of which an amount of 88 million has been added to this program. and of which 78% of the allocation also goes to compensation of employees. Still, we could see all the programs, majority of the budget or the huge chunk goes to compensation of employees. Development growth in the expenditure is for OSD as well, and as much as 7-day establishment. I want to also emphasize that budget for this program is not in line with the putting rehabilitation at the center of departmental activities, because we are saying we want to develop these offenders, but the budget is still low. We are still putting more money into security. Budget for development has always been low as compared to other programs. If you look at the budget over the years, it has always been low, the budget for this particular program. Social reintegration has been allocated 574 million vis-a-vis 474 million as compared to 2009-10. You could see that only an amount of 100 million has been added to this allocation. And it only takes 3.8% of the total allocation of DCS. And as well, also in this particular program, Chairperson, 96.6% goes to compensation of employees. You'd be aware that this particular program, social reintegration, its aim is to assist ex-offenders reintegrate successfully into the community. And we know there are a number of challenges that face these ex-offenders in the community, issues of employment, issues of stigmatization, and so on and so forth. And the budget for this program does not begin to speak to whether are we able to provide services or programs to these people after they've been released, because much emphasis has been put on people who are still in prison. But we are not saying more or much about those who have been released. I think also we need to have programs, aftercare programs for these offenders. So the budget should also speak to that, to say that as much as we want to try and reduce the issue of recidivism, because in most cases we know that ex-offenders, they relapse into crime immediately after release because of the number of challenges that they're facing in the community. So if you don't put more money into this program, we are more likely to experience the same problem. We're crying about recidivism and so on and so forth. We're not going to win this the fight against recidivism. Objectives in this program include reducing parole violations through intense monitoring. And again, this is all about security rather than programs for offenders, because the objective here is to try to increase monitoring of these offenders. We are not saying anything about putting programs to assist these ex-offenders, but we want to monitor them after release. So it's police them. Thanks, Mr. Mata. We want to police them after release. So we don't have faith. In fact, we are saying the program that we've provided to these people whilst they are still in prison, we don't have faith in those programs. Because if we have faith, we are not going to invest money into policing these people after being released. Because we'd expect that these people have learned and they've got skills, then they'll be able to stand on their own 2 feet after release. But instead, we're trying to police them further. Last program, which is facilities, Jefferson, has been allocated 1.8 billion vis-a-vis 1.6 billion from 2009-10, of which is an increase of 9.33%, and facilities takes 12% of the total allocation of DCS. And we could see an amount of 727 million has been allocated to the two existing PPPs present, that is Mangaung and Bloemfontein, for this coming financial year. And DCS indicated, according to the strategic plan, that they indicate to complete 19 parole board offices and video remand in 22 centers. The concern as well, I was checking into progress report in terms of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. Somewhere at the end of last year, they've installed almost 45 video equipment or video remand equipment that links the courts with the correctional centers. They've installed 45, according to their report. But so far this year, I think they've installed, if I'm not mistaken, it's three, including the one in Pretoria. Mr. Fraser will agree with me that we've seen one in Pretoria Central Prison. So there's no relationship between the number of this equipment that have been installed in the courts and the ones that have been installed in correctional facilities, because they have to link. So how would you, you'd want to have 50 there, but you have one there. So it means at the end of the day, the court would have to wait for this year to install the same number of these facilities. So maybe we also need to understand in terms of this year, what is the hold up in terms of being on speed or being on an equal footing with the Department of Justice in terms of installing this video equipment. In conclusion, this year's budget does not prioritize rehabilitation and programs because we could see most of the rehabilitation programs, care, development, and then corrections, the allocation for those programs are significantly low. So one would say there's no priority in terms of rehabilitation under this year. And the budget continues to ignore the vision of the white paper, which is to put rehabilitation at the center of departmental activities. And we are aware that 70% of the budget goes to compensation of employees. As a result, we expect value for money from these employees. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you. So, because this is a briefing, I'm only going to allow for questions of clarity there, questions of clarity. The real discussion will take place in the next agenda item when the department is here. We're not going to debate the content of this briefing. Are there any questions of clarity on the input? Mr. Madassa?
Yeah, just regarding the video link equipment, is it possible that the State Injustice are 45 in 45 different courts or in one court?
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that they are linking to the three? The 45 are linked to the three in DCS. I don't know, maybe technology works like that.
Yep. We'll ask the department
does it,
that
question. I think they have to be one to one or
no, we'll ask the department that question. It also struck me. Just a question from my side and for if you have the answer offhand. What is the current vacancy rate in the department? Now, do you have a figure? Because if we're saying 98% of this budget goes to employee compensation, and let's assume we've got a vacancy rate of 20%. If we then fill that vacancy rate, then we have a problem. I'm looking at the auditors here because you guys, I know in my previous life, one of your bugbears were the vacancy rates. When you're a scoper, you demand departments to fill the vacancy rate. If they fill this vacancy rate at this current, it means there's no money left for services. So just from your side, and for, do you have an idea what is the vacancy rate?
Unfortunately, Chairperson, I don't have the figure at the moment.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry,
You said 5%.
No, about 5%.
Thank you very much.
I remember that they have put an attachment of 46,000 employees, but the actual growth is 41,000 because of the financial concern. But my area of concern is area, because this is the area that it is mentioned by my colleague.
All right. Thank you so much. I really do think we need to explore it when we get there. One, the critical areas. For me, it's more than just those critical areas. You get head office that sits with a whole lot of people that I think are better suited in the centres rather than head office. So I'm saying the whole shifting of the post of the people. So, yeah, but those are the things that I think we should explore with the department over and above everything else that comes up. I just needed clarity. So that helps us. So it's not really a crisis if they fill them all up, but it's where these people are placed that matters for us. Thank you very much, Mr. Fritz, and then Mr. Abraham.
There's an interesting comment.
Please, you
there's an interesting comment on Mr. Post findings and research is that it seems as if the thought reintegration of offenders means policing and monitoring. It doesn't mean anything about reintegration and reintegrating offenders. It's interesting that you pick that up. Because that's on the one hand, and then another point you made about the decrease in, I think, the budget, care budget. I said this in the last meeting also about all the social workers, temporary social workers have been fired. That means their contract ended. That's every prison. So where is the seriousness about rehabilitation when you end contract of people? The oldest of them, I love 3 years. At every prison you can find it out in the country. So I'm just saying, Mr. Chair, I think you picked that up again about care. We're not serious about rehabilitation. Thanks.
Mr. Abraham?
Chair, no, I merely want to place on the record my gratitude to the court for this presentation. It is not the sort of presentation that I'm accustomed to in other committees. And I appreciate it. I'm sure all of us. Thank you, Chair. Keep up the good work.
Mr. Chow?
Yes. Chair, I draw your attention to the tables in the budget, tables 20B and 20C.
Page
407. Specifically table 20B. As far as I can tell, in fact, the department has no base. In fact, it's slightly over. Established that these figures are to be believed.
All of us, it's an open discussion. I'm looking at it because if we're over, then it creates other problems. So when you say that, Mr. South, to the idiots like me, where exactly which figure are you talking about?
All right. If you look at table 20B, yes. The detail of approved establishment and personnel on
4.7.
Sorry, on 407,
yep.
Page 407.
Yep.
And then it says number of posts in the approved establishment, 45,941. Number of funded posts, 45,941. Number of additional posts
the establishment 43. Okay. But does that say number of funded posts, number of approved posts, it doesn't necessarily mean it's number of filled posts.
Well, then that's the second part of that table. Then they say number of personal posts filled, stroke planned for the unfunded establishment. And they say 41,000.
Yeah.
549.
Yeah.
Now, if they've got 45,941, they're actually over-established.
No, sir.
No.
45 is the post that have been approved, if you can put it that way. 41 are the ones that have warm bodies in there.
Okay. Right.
So there's about a 3,000 rand shortfall. The 3,000 warm bodies.
Okay.
Yeah, I got it.
Plus minus 5,000.
Yes, no, I'm saying. So that in fact confirms it, that there is about a 5,000 shortfall. 5% shortfall. All right. We will engage with these young men and ladies when they do rock up. Can we, because we've got just over 15 minutes, deal with two sets of minutes. They normally come with a big contingency. Cindy, where are they going to sit? Is there a way that we can maybe will we be able to take these chairs? Are these chairs suitable on? Okay, then we'll find a way of accommodating them. We don't have to do it.
It comes too many
employees. We'll turn around and face them. We have minutes of the 17th of February and minutes of the 3rd of March. Members have these sets of minutes. There should be one for the 3rd of March. A two-pager. 3rd of March, can people indicate those? That have you got extras for 3rd of March? All right? Thankfully, we've all had sight of the longer set of minutes. So that would help us. And those you'd recall were the minutes when the departments came with their presentations on the day of the meeting and we decided to change course. So are there any corrections on page one of that set of minutes? Page two. Page three. Page four. Happiness on page five. Page number six. Page number seven, any changes? Page seven, any changes? No. Page number eight, any changes? Laat ze negen, enige veranderen. Laat ze nummer tien. Page 11, any changes there? Page number 12, any changes there? And page number 13, happiness. Page number 14 and page number 15, any changes? Nobody is indicating that these are not an accurate reflection of the meeting of the 17th. Can we have people move that we adopt it? Yes, we do, and the House is happy with it. Well, Anthony, 17 pages, very well captured. Nobody's complaining. Thank you very much. The minutes of the 3rd of March are a 5-pager. I'm not sure if members want to have a few minutes just to quickly squeeze through them because you've received them now, some of you. Can we give you 2 minutes just to quickly go through them? Some of us have had them for a while. Okay.
Because they are in charge of that.
All right. On that day, Mpo gave us the briefing on the state of the nation and its implications on us as a committee. Are there any corrections that need to be effected on page number one?
No, effected on page one, we said of the Congress of the People, didn't it be COVID?
Instead of?
Congress of the People.
No.
Page number two? Any changes on page number two? Page number two. Corrections on page or additions on deletions on page number three. Page number four. Page number five. And page number six, any changes? If not, can we have somebody move the adoption of the minutes? Thank you very much, and the House therefore approves. These minutes are adopted, and I must just enlighten members that these things get put onto all sorts of websites, the Parliamentary Monitoring Group and everybody. So once we've adopted them, it means we all must defend them at the end of the day. So it's important that we are comfortable with the contents, journalists and everybody else picks up from these things. So it's not just about compliance, but it's about ensuring that South Africa understands what we're discussing and we are able to defend it. Thank you very much. The department should be here in 10 minutes. Because we're not meeting in this fashion again, I don't think. We might have to, maybe just to adopt the I'm looking at Cindy. Our report after this hearing normally has to be tabled in the ATC. That says the department, the committee has considered everything. Cindy, when will you be able to have that consolidated? How soon after today's meeting?
Tomorrow.
No, it's not an issue. If you could have it to members by, you email it to everybody, don't you? No. If you could have it in the pigeonholes by Monday night, if members can look at it on Tuesday, we're going to have to find 10 minutes just to sit together. By when must it go into the ATC?
By the 24th. It has to be in the morning of the 24th, so we have to think about the evening of the
24th. Meet on the 24th? No, we can't meet on the 24th. That's my problem. We certainly can't have a. We're certainly not going to be. I would imagine there'll be a three-line whip on the 24th. I would imagine there'll be a three-line whip, and everybody'd want to. Unless we are saying that for 10 minutes after 2 on that day, we just meet for 10 minutes just on the 23rd, eh? You said it must be in by the 24th.
But we have to send it off to ATC by the evening of the 24th.
Yeah. All right. Can we agree? I don't know. I would assume that the president would be through by lunchtime. I would imagine he'd be through by lunch. Is it if we get that report to members by the end of business in the pigeonholes by Monday? Let's put it that way. We have to approve. We have approved. Yeah, okay. So, if we have it at the end of business on Monday, Cindy.
Monday,
I know. Oh, you also went on holiday on Monday. Yes. But you're on holiday. You're going to come and open? All right. Cindy is giving us an assurance that on the eve of that public holiday, it will be in our pigeonhole, which means that Tuesday morning, we have a responsibility of getting those minutes, that report, looking at it, and then at some time we will find time for a 10-minute get-together just to consider it. Cindy then must have it in by the evening of the 24th. 24th up to lunchtime, we're not going to have any time. So it might have to be on the 23rd sometime, or I don't know what is the program. The 23rd is Tuesday. I know that many members from the smaller parties on a Tuesday have other meetings. But can we... I'm not sure, Ms. Bly, if you have it offhand, Mr. Self, I'm not sure, and Mr. Fritz, anybody else, and our own members from the ANC on the side. But I'm sure, could we squeeze in a 12:30 to 1 o'clock meeting on that day, or do you meet up to lunchtime on the 23rd?
No.
Mr. Fritz, on it?
No.
Just before we break for lunch.
Yeah.
On the Tuesday, I know you guys have meetings on Tuesdays. Okay, all right. But for everybody else, because we would need a quorum to adopt it, can we tentatively say that we will meet from 12:30 to 1 on Tuesday? So that at lunchtime, Cindy has that report and she can do the necessary so that we don't have any legal problems when we debate on the 21st. Is that all right?
Yes, sir.
Cindy, you'll find some time and a venue on the 23rd from 12:30 to 1, just to adopt the report. Thank you very much. That's the first issue. On that one? That's the first one. And then on the second one, Cindy, you'd recall a few weeks ago we had given members tasks for their research visit. And there were one or two that were saying they might have problems with access. Can we agree that those that don't have this green card that some of us have, talk to Cindy, but I also think, Cindy, that if you just... do we want to make this announced or unannounced? Do we want prior preparations before you go to Joburg, or are you just going to rock up there using that as an example?
We can.
It's better if it's announced?
Yeah.
All right.
Because sometimes it is even if it's working.
Okay. So, Cindy, I'm sure you would remember who was allocated where, if you can just note. But you don't have the date, right?
No, we don't have the date. You have to make them to aware that it will be coming during
recess.
And it will be good for us to get their contact. When we reach at the gate there, then we tell the security there that where who must we contact.
Okay. So, before members then leave on Friday next week, you can just, or even after you've left, but just ensure that you work with Cindy so that you don't pick up unnecessary bureaucratic problems when you visit the various sites. And Cindy was doing the sums. You'd recall that we said the two provinces that we hadn't covered or wouldn't cover would be KZN and
Eastern
Cape. We had covered. Dhaka is there. KZN and Limpopo throughout Northwest were the two. In our original calculation, it appears as if budget-wise, all of us wouldn't be able to go and visit both of them. So I was of the view, and I asked Cindy to investigate, splitting us into two. In other words, instead of 20 of us going to KZN and then thereafter going to Northwest, that 10 will go this way and 10 will go this way. Or I'm saying 50-50 would go either way. So I just thought I must bring that to your attention, depending on the finances. When we get back, we might not all go to these two, but half will go this way and the other half will go that way. The intention is that as soon as we get back, as soon as possible thereafter, we should have covered all 9 provinces. So Cindy's working on that. And I'm sure by the time we get back from recess, we will have confirmation one way or the other. And then we'll have to argue who goes to Limpopo Northwest and who goes to KZN.
Sorry,
Chief. Mr. Fritz wanted to say something. I just thought because we're not going to have another opportunity at this level to have these discussions. So these are the things that are in the pipeline. If there's anything members want to raise, I had seen Mr. Fritz, anything at all, and then Mr. Abra.
Thank you, Mr. Chief. I've been, for the last few months, a lot of people have been raising issues with me around the whole idea of rape in prisons and workshops on rape in our prisons. But it's in a very unstructured way. And then I've emailed also the lady from International Defence, remember, I think it was maybe Cynthia something from Defence, Just Detention International. And part of what came from my emails with her was whether she wouldn't like to do, and I've asked her whether she wouldn't like to do a briefing to our committee on the work they are doing, because it's good to look at best practices in other countries. And I'm just putting it to the committee whether we shouldn't look in the next term. I know she will be coming to South Africa in April sometime after recess, where they shouldn't have other cities. An hour would be sufficient on the day that we meet. Perhaps just put her in for a slot for 1 hour if it's possible. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Members must talk to that. Mr. Abraham?
Chair, my policy normally is that when you go to state institutions that are doing service, you just pitch up there. But I'll be courteous enough to call them in the morning and say that I'm coming. Because I've had occasions where you pitch up at a place and you find that the head is not there. I'm not only correctional centers, but other institutions too. And they are supposed to be there. I mean, they are full-time employees. So that's my attitude. But I'll be courteous enough to call them in the morning. And then, Chair, I asked the last time if we could just be given a sort of a questionnaire, not to ask them questions, but I mean for our own edification, so that the sort of reports that come in would more or less be standard as to the sort of things that we ask. And, of course, if something else comes out of it, we shall do so. Thank you.
All right. So, yeah, no, I think you're fine. Maybe some of us would want to do it that way. All I'm saying is that there is the possibility of talking to Cindy if you've got a problem. But if you want to rock up there with your car and you're forceful enough to get in, then by all means do it. It probably is the better way of doing it. But if all else fails, Cindy is able to facilitate. Remember, we're going to do oversight. We're not going to visit the center manager. We'll get the center manager's absence will be part of our report. There's no reason why we can't go into the center manager's not there. But you know, maybe it's up to us. We will work with Cindy individually. At the end of the day, a report must be tabled by each member when we get back. There shouldn't be an excuse why we weren't able to visit these centers. And the template, Cindy, if we could get that also before the 26th, it would help us. Because we rise on the 26th, I think. And we would get that report. Mam Nyanda?
Thank you, Captain. I was going to support the issue of saying, let's really inform them so that we must find them there. Okay. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Marasa?
I support the suggestion of Mr. President.
Mr. Fritzmaid, yeah, okay. In our design of the new one, we will find a slot for the specialist on inmate abuse. Fine, we will do that. And then, of course, we will do what we discussed earlier on. So we'll begin to design the program, incorporating the two methods. Thank you very much. It's 10 o'clock exactly. The department isn't here, so we are they outside? Oh, all right. How are we going to, what are we going to do? We can move that side and make them sit here if we want to. It's fine. I mean, that's not an issue in my life. Oh, do they have they have a presentation. Is it fine if some of us come and sit on this side? Is that all right? Or if all the members sit on the one side and we make them sit on the other side? Okay. Thanks. Everybody else, thank you very much. And they can.
So are we entitled to cross the floor yet?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Department of Corrections, welcome to the Auditor General's office. Welcome to Treasury. And to our partners in the media, welcome. Hopefully we have welcomed everybody here. We are having one of the most important meetings
that this department will have, because this meeting determines the committee's approach to the budget and to the strat plan that have been forwarded to us as a committee. Also to state that in the run-up to this meeting, we've had briefing from Parliament researchers, and we had briefing from various stakeholders. Dr. Kutsia was a spectator or an observer in one of them, hoping that he has shared with you the sentiments that came out of that meeting, at least so that you come here prepared and we have a constructive discussion. So, beyond this meeting, we as a committee will get together and prepare a report to Parliament and express our views as a committee on the strat plan and on the budget. And on the 25th, we will, as committee, debate the budget. It's scheduled for the 25th. So this is a very important meeting from our side, at least, in terms of what is probably the key function of this committee, oversight. So that is the scene setting for this meeting. We are hoping that we are out of here by 1 o'clock. We've been given this venue until 1 o'clock. We did receive a presentation from the department some time ago, a week or so ago. I think all members have an 18-slide presentation that hopefully members have gone through and digested together with... No, I beg your pardon. I'm looking at a different presentation and I say 18 slides. Then I have my notes. I'm looking at... I almost devoured some secret information. Yeah, we have a... Oh, we have two presentations. Yes, I recall. Dated the 17th of March. Members would have received those presentations, made notes, and we'll allow the department at 10:15 until 11:15 to do your presentation. 11:15, we'll open it up for general discussion. We all know each other, so there's no need for introduction. We'll get straight into the business. Acting Commissioner, the floor is yours.
Chairperson, honourable members and colleagues, good morning and thank you for the opportunity for us to present on the strategic plan. I'm going to make some opening remarks just to contextualise things, and then we would want to move to present on the finances and then end with the presentation on the strategic plan, and we will do that within the hour that has been allocated to us. I think the strategic plan that we are presenting to you is a product of a very intensive review process over the last 6 months because of the resource constraints of the NTS process, and we have ensured that in that process we have also ensured that we have remained aligned to the government outcomes that have been determined through the cabinet report. I think it's useful just as a background to reflect our current offender population as at the end of December, a total population of 161,000, and I'm rounding off thousands, and I hope that that's acceptable. Remand detainees, we've got 50,000. Sentenced offenders, 111,000. A youth population of 57,000. And a maximum classification population of 22,000, which is 20% of the overall population. The medium is 56,000, and the minimum is down to is a total of about 8,000. So that's just set the scene of what we're managing. I think that there has been some significant changes in those figures, particularly around maximum security due to the reclassification process that has been proceeded during the course of this year. The approach that we have to aligning our strategic plan with the white paper is that we are following the direction that we have taken the Cabinet in 2005-06, which is an incremental approach to implementation of the white paper over what we had identified then as a 15 to 20 year process. The important element for us to flag in this process is that the core mandate of the department as defined in that white paper is a combination of rehabilitation and reintegration of offenders in a secure and safe environment in order to enhance public safety. The challenge that we face in each strategic plan and in our day-to-day operations is to be able to find the balance between the safety of inmates, the rehabilitation and reintegration, and public safety. And I think that those are issues that cascade through to then how we balance our budget allocation between the different budget programs. We are committed to ensure that we find a dynamic balance between the balancing of budget allocation and resource allocation in the broader sense to security and to rehabilitation. Our approach is that we are a security institution, and we need to ensure that while we focus on rehabilitation and reintegration and humane incarceration, we do not at any stage behave in a way that increases the security risk in this department, and that we ensure that there is a dynamic process. What we want to flag is that through the MTS and beyond, as we increase, for example, the use of technology within a security budget, it has implications for personnel budgets, and it has implications for being able to reallocate money to other elements. But I think that we are in a situation where currently we've got if one looks at the relationship between security and rehabilitation, it's about 62% in the coming financial year. It gets to 82%. Rehabilitation being 82% of the security budget, if one compares them. There are a number of processes at current in the department that will see a shift in relation to that. The one particular element of that is the career pathing of the OSD. Because at the moment, the OSD has very large unit offices in security officers. You'll remember that in the OSD, we've got the two paths, the rehabilitation officers and the security officers. The career pathing in that process, and as we move to be creating the case officers and the case management committee and doing competency assessments of our staff and identifying who are more appropriate as rehabilitation officers as opposed to security officers, there will be a shift in the processes or the balance of compensation allocation between security and the other four programs. Part of that will be done through management of staff utilization, a process that we've identified now as being a critical element of our focus of the MTS, and a far more strategically driven approach to staff utilization. Obviously, there will also be elements that we will be taking into in-tech submissions as we go through where there are extra funds that are needed in relation to that. The integrated planning that we have been embarking on over this period has taken place in the context of two constraints. First, this is the constraints across the whole of government in terms of the recession, but secondly, constraints that we've had due to the impact of the OSD and the funding of OSD from within our current budget. We have, as a result of that, put greater emphasis on resource planning, and we have quite deliberately moved strategies into outer years, where we do not have the resources to be able to deliver it, or we have adjusted targets where we do not have the resources to be able to achieve targets in a particular year. So I think that we have a more achievable approach in relation to that. We're beginning the 2010-11 financial year with an acute awareness that our budget does not cover the mandate of DCS. Adequacy, we are engaging Treasury and principals on it, have been and will continue to be. What we have done is to ensure that we have identified the key elements without which we cannot without which we cannot exist. So we identified as critical elements that have to be, where our allocation has to be prioritized as being the essential expenditure on inmates, so including the clothing, the medication for inmates. Essential expenditure on livestock, again, the medication and feed. leaving, the capital works budget, which is obviously a ring-fenced budget, the compensation of employees, which has long-term carry-through implications, and then our contractual obligations. So we have identified those as the areas that we need to prioritize and be able to deal with that. The moratorium that we've had in place will be lifted from the beginning of April. We put in place a mechanism for being able to manage the filling of vacancies and the use of our compensation budget so that we can focus, we can use the money that is available very strategically. So that process will enable us to manage within the post-establishment of 41,500, which is what we've got through the NTS. So we have got a reduction in relation to that compensation budget that we will have to manage very strategically within that process. The outcome three of the outcomes that the Cabinet of Portland has identified, in other words, people in South Africa are and feel safe, is obviously a key element that informs the broader context within which our strategic plan delivers. There are key outputs in the outputs that have been identified that relate to correctional services. The most important of those are the integration effectiveness of the criminal justice system, and with that is obviously the remand detention branch, the improvement of offenders' access to rehabilitation programs, and an ongoing reduction of parole violations. So those are elements that are in the outputs that are required to deliver on for people to feel, increasingly feel and be safer in South Africa. All of those are elements that you will find factored into our strategic plan. The issue of offender or inmate population management is a key priority focus for the department. We are aiming to enhance the manner in which we manage our inmate population in a way that reduces overcrowding. The work of the inmate audit task team that the minister has established will enable us to refine the implementation of that strategy. Our remand detention project also impacts on that, particularly in terms of the management of issues of bail protocols and case backlogs with the criminal justice department in relation to that. Obviously, there is the flip side of reducing remand detention, so it does result in increases in the offender numbers. Our infrastructural development processes, be it new facilities, upgrading, extension of existing facilities, rationalization of facilities to be cost-effective units will also continue through the NTS. On the self-sufficiency and use of offender labor, our starting point is that we need to ensure that in the approach of, that in our approach to the utilization of offender labor and increasing of the self-sufficiency, we ensure that we don't enhance the security risks of the process. The population which is able in terms of our policy to be involved in offender labor is only the medium and minimum classification. That works out to be 88,500 people as opposed to the 111 of the full sentenced offender population. What we do believe is important is that where a center has production, be it agricultural or workshop facilities, that we should move to a point at which maximum security inmates are not accommodated within those facilities. So that will be part of the strategy going forward, is to deal with that. Our commitment is to ensure that we take the time to develop and resource a comprehensive self-sufficiency strategy. We need to be able to define what is meant by self-sufficiency. We need to be able to do a thorough analysis of our current production capacity in each of the different fields, be it animals, farming or livestock farming, our workshops, our furniture production, the cleaning facilities within our own department and in others. And then be able to set ourselves targets as to what is the capacity that we would want to improve to, and most importantly, what then is the resourcing strategy that will be necessary in order for us to deliver on that. Our belief is that it's only with that detailed planning work that we will really get to a point at which we have a comprehensive approach to improving and complying with what the Act requires of enhancing self-sufficiency. That basis will enable us to be very clear about how we go forward and be able to say, against the 15 billion budget of the department, the virtual amount of services provided by offenders can be adequate in consequence.
The ramp process that the government had embarked on is now completed. It now enables us to start utilizing offender labor in a way that was to some extent curtailed by the ramp project. What will be important is that there will need to be MTEC bids in relation to the resourcing of a proper self-sufficiency strategy. In the meantime, obviously, we continue to enhance as we can with existing resources, our involvement of offender labor, and we will continue to report on that. But we do believe that that coherent resource strategy is necessary for us to deliver on what both our political principles and the portfolio committee have been requiring of us. And we do want to say that that's a multi-year objective. It's not something that is going to be a deliverable in an immediate thing. The planning work is deliverable in an immediate thing. The parole system is a focused area of improvement. I've already reflected on the inmate audit task team, which will add value to the functioning of our parole system, identifying glitches in those systems. We're moving to the appointment of new parole boards for a five-year period, bearing in mind that our parole boards are appointed on a contract basis. The finalization of the medical parole regulatory framework, which may well involve amendment to legislation, the finalization and implementation of the incarceration framework are the key elements of our work on that system. We have identified a focus on youth and on children, and the implications of the Child Justice Act have been taken on board in relation to the DCS responsibilities in that regard. We would be aiming to ensure that we can accommodate children in a specialised way so that our service provision to them is maximised rather than landing up where children are scattered and you've got one or two children in different centres. In terms of our youth, we've got 21% of the offender youth population that are maximum offenders. We have 57,000 youth offenders. I wish it was 57. 24,500 remand and 32,500 of sentenced offenders. We have youth both within the general correctional centres, but we have 15 dedicated youth development centres housing both medium and maximum offenders. There's a range of programs in those focusing on education, skills development, autumn recreation, production opportunities, be it wood for agriculture, depending on centre to centre, risk profiling, risk assessment. We've procured a youth resilience program and are currently training social workers in those youth development centres in that regard. And we are in the process of working on development of programs within our own department aimed at youth. The criminal justice review, just to flag that for the portfolio committee, is a critical element of the work of the JCB. It's very important for us in relation to the remand detention project, but also in the sense that we have ensured that the criminal justice review does in fact expand its work to cover the full spectrum of the criminal justice system from the point of arrest right away through to the end of service. So there will be a greater focus going forward in the criminal justice review on rehabilitation issues, on non-custodial sentences and on parole matters going forward. In terms of the remand detention, the finalisation of the white paper and work on the regulatory framework, the establishment of a branch, and obviously the ongoing work with the criminal justice departments around the case flow management, video remand, those are value adds that will come into that process. We have also looked at a process in relation to enhancing the probation system. We're in the process of looking at creating probation correctional officials, I'm not sure, correctional probation officers. I get the sequence of my words wrong on those. And correctional assistant probation officers, that is a process which will need to go into MTEC processes. It requires creation of posts and funding. But that is aiming to be able to ensure that we are better able, as a criminal justice system, to look at non-custodial sentences. The last area that I want to deal with was the issue of our compensation of employees' budget. Currently at 59%, although it does drop slightly over the MTS process. We need to emphasise for the portfolio committee that corrections indeed is a people-driven process. Our main concern is whether the compensation whether the staff are being appropriately utilized, and we are in embarking on a process of, with the second day establishment and the OSE, evaluating intensively the mechanisms for staff utilization and ensuring that our staff are appropriately and effectively utilized. The migration of officials as part of the OSE from non-center base to center base that is taking place currently is aimed at improving staffing at the center level. It obviously has some concomitant risks in the areas that people are moving away from, but we've embarked on a process of managing those risks. And part of our centralized process of managing staff utilization through the MTF will be aimed at ensuring that we manage those risks connected to it. The implementation of 7 days is an ongoing process in the sense that we are exploring the impact of 7 day as we go ahead. It relates very directly to the issues and the challenges of staff utilization. It is implemented across the department, and there is no need for us to even reconsider that element. The challenges remain in the way that we use staff and the rostering systems that are in place. The aim of the 7 day establishment is to improve the structured day process and the access of offenders to programs. That is where the staff utilization, in order to deliver on that, remains a critical priority for us to be able to deliver on. I have already, I think, reflected on the OSD, the ongoing OSD processes and the process of assessing our correctional officials in order to get them into those two career paths, security and rehabilitation. We want that process to be a competency-based process rather than purely an option of where people would prefer to be, so that we can be sure that we're getting the right competencies in those two streams. That process links in with our structure and function alignment, in particular ensuring that we've got the appropriate structure at centre level to be able to deal with that. The impact of our post-establishment being peaked at 41,500 does have an impact on the department in terms of our delivery. Our challenge is going to be to try and ensure a strategic approach to staff utilization within that in order to maximize delivery with that 41,000, but obviously also continuing engagement with the with national and with our political principles in relation to the pressure on delivery of that. As a conclusion, just to list for the portfolio committee, our priority areas, 7 day establishment and consolidation of that, and with it the stream, the career passing of our correctional officials, the remand detention management improvement, offender population management, utilization of offender labour, enhanced parole system, service provision to youth and children, stakeholder relations management, improved governance, legislative framework, and phased implementation of the offender rehabilitation part of those that we've identified, and those remain priority areas going over the if I could then, Chairperson, with your concurrence, hand over to Ms. Moreka, who will present on finance, and then Dr. Kutsia will close in with a run through of the strategic plan presentation. Those are the two presentations that have been provided to the support committee.
Thank you, Commissioner. Honourable Chair, the presentation will be focusing on the 2010-2013 estimates of national expenditure allocation, and we also indicate to the committee how that allocation is divided according to programs and according to the data classification, and also we indicate the critical priorities that the 2010 MTF allocation will be addressing over the MTF. In terms of slide 4, we actually indicate how the department moved from a baseline of 14 billion to 19 billion in the outer year, and what has been additionally allocated over the MTF is an amount of 300 million per year over the MTF for the implementation of the various OSCs in professional services, and also we have an additional allocation of 583 going to 652 million over the MTF for the compensation of employees adjustment. And a cabinet decision to actually ensure that all government departments conduct business otherwise in terms of being more efficient. There is a deduction of efficiency gains over the MTF, 22.6 million growing to 140 million in the outer year. On the triple P's, Honorable Chair, we engaged National Treasury on this issue to reschedule the allocations that were in the 2009 base, like 2010 baseline. That will allow DCS to actually finalize the model to be implemented for the procurement of the NDC for facilities that are triple P. So that's why we have been rescheduling. But what will happen in the next MTS cycle, there will be a process where we will recalculate what would be then forming part to the 2013 onwards financial year. That will also be done in consultation with National Treasury. So we are envisaging that as we go through the 2011 MTS processes, MTS processes, that engagement will be done and dealt with, so that we are able then to see what impact we have in the 2013 cycle. In terms of the GFS allocation, our current payments grow from 14 billion to 15.5 billion, transfers and subsidies from 13 million decreasing to 8.7 in the outer year, and payments for capital assets 1.1 billion increasing to 2.675 billion over the outer year. We also are indicating on slide 7 the MTF allocation per program, the 7 programs that the department is having, on administration growing to 4.4 billion, security from 5.1 to 5.7 billion, corrections 1.5 to 1.7, and Commissioner has alluded in terms of saying that the department, if you look at the security program and also the rehabilitation program, so the program that drives rehabilitation, there is both corrections, care development will be part of those programs that are more centered on rehabilitation and correcting and offending behavior. Care also grows from 1.5 to 1.7 million. Development program, 526 million to 584 million in the outer year. Social reintegration, moving from 575 to 637 million. And facilities, that's where we have the provision for capital works and also the triple P facilities, the current and the ones that are envisaged. That's why you see in the outer year the growth of from 1.9 billion in 2011-12 to 3.5 billion. As I've indicated, that figure may change as we continue to engage in the MTS processes around the new triple P, including the existing ones, but those are contractual obligations. But on the new, the figure may change based on what would have been recalculated in consultation with Treasury. The GFS classification, we are actually indicating the compensation of employees for the department will go from 10.5 billion to 11.6 billion, goods and services 2.5 to 2.9, interest and rent on land, we did not put any allocation over the MTF, total transfers and subsidies, as I've indicated, there's a decrease in the outer years, and payment for capital assets from 1.1. In terms of what has been exclusively and allocated also in our funding over the MTF, we've got the 1.1 billion, that is the funds that were devolved to from public works to departments for the leases, municipal services, 1.1 going to 1.4 billion. And then the triple P's, what we have is the 2012 statement of 1.5 billion. And the capital works program, it's increasing from 914 million to 1 billion. What we actually need to be indicating, Honorable Chair, is that the DCS vote will be growing at a rate of 44% from 9.3 billion. If you look at the historical trends in 2006-07, to about 13.8 billion in the current financial year, and that will grow to 18.2 billion in the 2012-13 financial year, at an average of 9.7%. And mainly the result or the influence that has in that growth over the 2010 NTF is the 600 million allocation for implementation of the OEC, the compensation for employees adjustment that have alluded to previously. In terms of like one goes to program administration, we are also indicating that particular program, if you look at its historical trends, it moved from 2.6 billion to 7 to 3.5 in the current financial year, and we are envisaging that 2.5 billion in 2013 giving us an annual average of 8.7%. If you look at that particular program, because if you look at the OECD for correctional officials, that affects all seven programs in DCS, with certain programs specifically on OECD that are actually having their mother departments outside DCS. So if you look at care programming, the various OECDs there for psychology, for pharmacists, and all that, but those are my impressions, basically the correctional officials. A master information system plan. That allocation was received some 2-3 years ago, and we continue to actually interact with the department recently for the development of the master information system plan. There are various projects that are covered in the strategy of the department. On program security, look at the historical trend from 2.9 billion to 7 to 5 billion in the current financial year. And the city that it will be 5.7 in the 2010 NTF, so with an average of 4.6%. Mainly, if you look at that growth in program security, it's mainly because of the improvement in the security in the correctional center that has been implemented in the past, and also the implementation of the 7-day establishment. That's one program that the focus would be in terms of the rent level. As Commissioner has indicated, the program maturity is very much labor intensive. That's why it's hitting about 98% of that particular program. So 98% of the program allocation goes to compensation of employees, then the other 2% for non-personnel expenditure. Program correction, which is one of the rehabilitation programs, historically grew from 7.2 million to 1.2 billion in the current financial year. And we indicate that growth to be around about 19.8% from the NTF. The growth in program corrections is due to a substantial increase also in the compensation of employees budget in the 2019 over the NTF as implementing the OECD, specifically for correctional officials. So in terms of the stream of corruption is falling under this particular program. And the stream of security is the security. The third stream is the social reintegration stream in terms of the own stream of correctional officials, which will be under program 6. Care program, that's another rehabilitation program and professional services. The growth there historically moved from 1.1 billion to 1.2 current year. The average annual of 13.2%. And if you look at that particular program, that's where we also allocate the implementation of the premises in the department, so that the government can see that growth. And also, in terms of this particular program, that indicated that's where the various OECDs under the health center are falling under. The OECDs, for doctors, for nurses, for pharmacists, for psychologists, are under this particular program. So there is that kind of an increase in terms of the compensation of employees budget. On program development, another rehabilitation program, look historically, it grew from 347.1 million in 67 to 438 current financial year. It's an average annual rate of 8.1%. And we project an increase of 8.5 million over the median 10. Giving us an annual rate of 10.1%. And also in terms of development, because we've got an OECD for the artisans covered also in this particular program, and also the OECD that indicated that it covers all programs, the OECD for correctional officials. So that impacts highly on the growth rate. Social reintegration, the third stream of the OECD for correctional officials, which helps in this particular program. And historically, grew from 319.2 million in 2007 to 474 in the current financial year. And also projecting that it will grow from 66.8 million in 2012 financial year at an average rate of 10.3%. Also, that indicates that where the OECD, the first thing is being implemented for correctional officials, so the increase in compensation of the major role in the increase of this particular program. Program facilities, as I've indicated, have the facilities program, the security guidelines for the department, and also the security facilities. that the program has increased from 1.3 billion into 7, currently in 9-10 of 1.7 billion. And with the construction of the new Kimberley Correctional Center playing a major role in terms of the impact of the growth of the trade site in this particular program, we expect it to grow at 7.7% to 3.5 billion in the first stage. But we think that in the 2011, we might see in the 2012 stage, we're probably going for 13-14, another probably rate of growth given the recalculation of the four properties after the mortgage has been finalized. The four facilities are indicated highly standard dress stock at 9%. And we are actually indicating that this increase in allocation will create an additional space based of 2,725, excluding Kimberley, because Kimberley has afforded the department an increase of space based of 3,000 space. What one wants to highlight, Honorable Chair, probably in terms of if you look at the yearly allocation of the department, the main challenge is that indicated if you look across the program, the main item that contributes to the growth of the program mainly is your personal budget, the compensation of employees, mainly except facilities for them. Facilities, of course, your program as the main contributor being the, either the construction of facilities or increasing the space in the organization. So, except that program, all other program, the main contributor to the conference is the compensation. And as the department implemented the resolution of 2007, the public service coordinating body and council, we had still a shortfall from the first year that resolution was to be implemented in 2007. So, since 2007-8 in DCS historically, you won't pick it up because we had to do serious fire and to actually cover. In 7-8, our main challenge was the implementation of the overtime, shifting from what the department had as an agreement with labor in terms of Saturday being not compensated by any monetary value and not paying also the basic of basic control limit at overtime rates for Sunday and Saturday holidays. So with us implementing that, we felt the cost pressure. And with the implementation of OECD, remember, with correctional services, it will be one OECD that affects all OECDs that are in government, including also in CDM. At a lesser interest, the other OECDs, mainly for us, which is the OECD for correctional officials. So what we have then in terms of those OECDs is that they created that particular problem for the department that we need to solve from the allocated, but the decision I think is like two. So we need therefore to say how do we, because most of these OECDs have been actually implemented. I think the only outstanding one is the one for psychology, which once approach is implemented, but it has not been finalized. So there would be a deadlock once the resolution is done in that particular chamber when we actually implement it. We are not the mother department, we take two from the Department of Public Works. So given the financial constraints that then we envisage in both the current financial year moving to the 2010 financial year, we had to do some serious reprioritization of the allocation within the department. So if you look at the compensation budget of the department, including phase two, because in 2009-10, we implemented phase one of the OECD for CO, which was then giving the one-stop payment and also adjusting the notches. But phase two recognizes the experience. In terms of the resolution, phase two is supposed to be implemented 1st of April 2010. That became a cost pressure for us. So the estimate that we have for phase two, which we are indicating that it is an estimate, but the process of calculating the department is engaging PPSA to actually then do also the final calculation on phase two in terms of level 3 to 8. That is the category of people in DCS, the correctional officers, who qualify for phase two. So levels 9 to 12 or levels 9 to 12 will not qualify. The estimate that we put in the 2010 budget is 431 million to implement then the recognition of experience for phase two. So if you take that and say, we had a moratorium that we implemented in 2008-09 because we projected then over expenditure, which we actually realized at the end of 2008-09. In 2010, we had to firm up the moratorium to not exclude critical skills to have 100% moratorium in the department in 1910. What we then have in the, over the MTF, as Commissioner indicated, is a reduction of our finance establishment to 41,500. 41,500 was the warm bodies that DPS held as of September in our system. So the 10.8 billion will cover the 41,500 establishment and phase two of the OMC for correctional officials, estimated currently at 41 billion. And the allocation of 15 billion will be covering the property management earmark funding of 1.1 billion and the capital loss project funding of 914 million. And then, given the constraints that we envisaged and that we are actually are aware of as a department over the 2010 MTF, still as a result of the human perspective, Commissioner indicated, and then prioritize inmate costs, which would be the medicinal part, the nutrition part for inmates, at 901 million, sustaining the current livestock that is there in our facility at 77 million in 2010, and therefore put aside an allocation for all contractual obligations, because we did not want to not honor, it would be more expensive not to honor our contractual obligations, because we've taken to court and therefore incur further funds in terms of verification costs. So that came to about 786 million. And then we had to put aside just a bare minimum administrative cost, therefore, to keep the administration running. Running to 807 million. Having done that, Honorable Chair, the allocation of 15.5 billion for 2010-11 had a shortfall. It was 15.1 billion. Because if I take all what I've indicated, the compensation employees and the priority issues, plus the EMF funding, research funding, it comes to 15.5 billion. And the allocation for 2010 is 15.1 billion, resulting in us having a shortfall of 397 million for 20 years. So we started in 2010-11 having that shortfall. We're conscious about that. We are also indicating how all the regions in terms of the priority areas will be benefiting from the 15.1 allocation on slide 22. I've indicated the rescheduling of the frequencies. And that's the easy process that we embark on in terms of calculating what will come into the outer year in the next MTF cycle. So slide 24 actually summarizes exactly what is discussed. We have from the allocation of 15.1 billion, and then what is discussed that you are going to cover, and indicating that at the end of the day we have that 4.7 billion that we do not have funds for 2011. But I must indicate that because the phase two of OEC 431 is not a final figure, that 384 may change. I don't want that to so that's not the same figure. The others are very much same figures, but the 431 under compensation, once it's confirmed, will have a clear sense of ending that that is the next effect of shortfall for 2010 by the FCA. We then are indicating to regions what is that has been allocated to them in terms of the priority area, and we're also indicating them to regions their allocation for 2011 separately. And also in terms of the economic administration, we are also indicating. I think the chair is now hand over to Dr. Kinsey for the strategy.
You've got 20 minutes. At exactly 4:15, we're going to hand over to members.
Honorable Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, in our opening remarks, the Acting Commissioner has already highlighted the context within which the strategic plan was developed. So I will skip the introductory slides of this presentation and go straight to slide number 5 that deals with the structure of the strategic plan. Just to indicate, Chair, that the strategic plan of the department is in line with the Public Service Regulations Part 3, B1, that gives us a sense of what should be in the strategic plan. And the plan does illustrate part A, B, C, and D, of which I will zoom into part D that deals particularly with the plans of the department. Hence, mentioning is made of the program performance, of project portfolio management strategy, the service delivery improvement plan, as well as a summary of the strategic human resource management plan of the department. The commissioners also mentioned in the opening remarks the priorities, the 11 priorities that's been identified in the department, and I won't go into that again. I will then go straight into part D of the strategic plan that deals with the plans. And Chair and members, you would have noticed that in the strategic plan it is reflected that the department has 10 measurable objectives, starting from measurable objective A1 to 4 that covers the program administration, B that covers program security, C program correction, measurable objective D that covers program care, E covers program development, F social reintegration, and G, measurable objective G, that covers the facilities program in the department. And slide 7 then, just extract from the plan, measurable objective A1 of the department that says to provide effective and efficient financial and supply chain management to the department. The department then has identified a number of indicators to measure how the department is achieving that measurable objective. And in terms of A1, that is the finance, we have 3 indicators that we will measure ourselves against in achieving this objective. And that is the percentage of expenditure, the percentage of expenditure to HDI service providers, and the number of audit qualifications and matters of emphasis. That is how we are going to measure ourselves in reaching that objective. And then the presentation just highlights some of the targets that have been set for year one, that is 2010-11. I have made available to the honourable members and chair just 2 slides that show the page reference numbers to go to the other targets should members want to see that. One target in reaching this objective is to reduce the level of deficiencies using the 2009-10 AGSA report as a basis. And then also to establish a maintenance of, or to maintain our database on losses, disposals, debts, fleet management, bids, contracts, and to have an analytical report on those. In terms of objective 2A2, to improve human resource capacity and management to enable the department to fulfill its mandate, the following indicators have been identified or developed within the department. So that is the number of persons days lost due to suspensions against the total number of annual working days, the number of grievances handled within 30 days versus the total number of grievances recorded, the number of persons days lost due to leave against the total number of annual working days, and the percentage of posts not filled versus the finance posts. And also find the percentage of compliance with government equity targets. And just again to highlight some of the targets, in 2010-11, an approved organizational structure reviewed in line with DCS strategies, the post-establishment aligned to the approved organizational structure, to acquire software to enhance personal control measures, and DCS-related OSDs implemented and aligned with performance management systems. That is within the program, within corporate services then. Measurable objective A3 is to ensure effective, legally sound, policy compliant, and corruption-free management of correctional services and effective knowledge management through improved information management systems and information and communication technology solutions and services in order to ensure information-driven decision-making within the department. And the performance indicators that we are going to use to measure ourselves in achieving that objective is the percentage of litigation cases won by DCS against the total number of cases finalized against it, the number of officials found guilty of fraud, corruption, and serious maladministration against the total number of officials charged in such cases. Against some of the targets, a litigation turnaround strategy developed, approved, and implemented with quarterly progress reports given. A new reoffending framework for the criminal justice system is approved by DCS and the JCPS. A 5% increase of public awareness and appreciation of DCS mandate and performance through execution of non-cost driving elements of the image turnaround strategy of the department. Then also the rollout approved of the ICT governance framework. Measurable objective 8.4, to ensure effective planning, resourcing, delivery, project management, monitoring, evaluation, and reporting for improved service delivery. We have one indicator that we will measure ourselves against there, and that is the percentage of compliance in the compliance improvement plan inspection. And our target, some of the targets, would be reduced audit queries on performance information, improved delivery by project in compliance with project plan, improved level of compliance from 88% to, that was the previous years, to 90% in the current, or rather in 10-11, and the functioning of the innovation board. That, so those measurable objectives cover then program administration, Honorable Chair. Objective B is to prevent persons incarcerated from participating in criminal activities and escaping by providing an environment that ensures the safety of all persons entrusted to the department's care, as well as the safety of the public. And the performance measures or the indicators, number of assault in correctional centers and remand detention facilities, the percentage of correctional centers and remand detention facilities with excess security turnstiles installed and functioning versus the total number of correctional centers and remand detention facilities planned to have installed and functioning turnstiles. The number of escapes from correctional centers and remand detention facilities. The percentage of vetted personnel versus the total personnel requiring vetting. And the number of unnatural deaths measured per 10,000 inmates. Again, some of the targets in 2010-11. The development of security personnel skills development framework, the development of security technology strategy, and a security analysis report that will be provided in 2010-11. Less than 4 inmates per 10,000 inmates who escape, that is the target, less than 74 assaults per 10,000 inmates, less than 3.2 unnatural deaths per 10,000 inmates in these facilities. Measurable objective C, to address the specific rehabilitation needs of persons who have been sentenced to correctional supervision or sentenced to incarceration in a correctional center or parole through regular assessment and providing correctional programs to address all the elements associated with offending behavior. The indicators relating to that measurable objective is the percentage of overcrowding in correctional centers and remand detention facilities, the percentage of incarcerated offenders with sentences longer than 24 months with correctional sentence plan calculated against the projected average of 41,828 offenders with sentences longer than 24 months without a correctional sentence plan. The percentage of comprehensive profiles compiled within 21 days versus the total number of offenders that should have been profiled within 21 days. The percentage of offenders participating in correction or correctional programs calculated against those who are eligible for correctional programs in terms of their correctional sentence plan. And then again, some of the targets. To compile correctional sentence plans, that means 100% of that, for all newly admitted offenders serving sentences longer than 24 months, to improve implementation of correctional programs, those are some of them, the anger management, substance abuse, etc., by 15% to offenders serving 24 months and longer. If I may go back to the middle column, continuing with indicators, percentage of offenders with work opportunities calculated against the total offender population who qualify for work opportunities. Percentage of offenders completing pre-release programs calculated against the total number of offenders with approved parole dates. And percentage of quality assured correctional programs provided by external service providers as calculated against the total number of quality assured corrections programs per year. And then in the outer column, the targets continue. Maintain the level of overcrowding and child remand detainees removed to care facilities, the management of the installation for year postponement, and the development of a framework for managing foreign nationals in our system. In terms of measurable objective B, that is care to ensure the personal well-being of incarcerated persons by providing various needs-based services, and honourable chair members, due to time constraint, I will not go through those indicators again, but those are the indicators that we will measure ourselves against in obtaining or achieving that measurable objective of to ensure personal well-being of incarcerated persons. And some of the targets in terms of the outer column, again, a database of healthcare services, HIV and AIDS, social work, psychological services, and spiritual care will be developed in the 2010-11 financial year. And some of the targets in involving or in those programs, psychological services, 10,500, social work services, 109,000 sessions, spiritual care, 185,000 sessions, healthcare, 100%, HIV and AIDS, 100%. And slide 13 then continues with care, perhaps just to highlight some, again, of the targets in that slide, is the establishment, or to establish and improve service level agreements on healthcare service provision, and an impact measurement instrument implemented in two management areas per region in 2010-11. Measurable objective E, that is to provide need-based educational skills and other development-related programs to facilitate the reintegration of offenders into community. In terms of the indicators, we are measuring ourselves against the number of offenders participating in literacy programs, in ABET, in further education and training. And the last bullet on that slide in the middle column is the percentage of offenders participating in skills development programs versus the total offender population who are eligible for skills development programs in terms of their correctional sentence plan. The target database reflecting management information on formal education, skills development, production workshop in agriculture, sports, recreation, arts and culture, as well as the departmental poverty alleviation initiative development are developed in line with the war on poverty. Slide 17 is a continuation of development, and perhaps just to highlight again the last bullet in the middle column, that is the indicator percentage of offenders participating in production workshops and agriculture programs versus the total offender population who are eligible for such programs in terms of their correctional sentence plan. If I then move to social integration, measurable objective F is to provide needs-based programs and services to offenders to facilitate their social acceptance and effective integration into communities. And our measurement or indicator would be the percentage of parole violations, the percentage of cases considered by the parole board versus the number of cases eligible for consideration, the percentage of cases referred to the parole review board, the percentage of remand detainees under community supervision versus the total remand detainee population with bail, the percentage of probationers versus the total number of incarcerated offenders with sentences less than 24 months, and the number of parole cases in which victims of crime make presentation. Again, just perhaps a if I may highlight two of the targets for 2010-11, that is a revised medical parole legislation and policy, and the number of violations reduced by 2% from an average baseline of 10,555. So in the 2010-11 financial year, we are aiming to reduce that number of violations with 211. Slide 19 is then the last measurable objective, number 10, that is G, provide facilities to support the department in its core functions of security, corrections, development and care, and social integration. And there we have only one indicator that we will measure ourselves against, Honourable Chair and members, and that is the number of new bed spaces created. And all those targets will refer to our actions in terms of that particular indicator. The plan then illustrates certain strategies that the department has identified to achieve those measurable objectives. There are 83 strategies. Perhaps I should just make that first bullet on slide 20, stress that one, that the plan reflects the work to be done by the National Office, and that is reflected in what we term as the regulatory and monitoring strategy, or the R&M strategy, and work to be done by regions, that is the operation strategy. So the total number of strategies within those two are as follows: 83 within the R&M and 58 in the operation strategy. And all those strategies are directed at achieving the 10 measurable objectives and delivery on the white paper. Honourable Chair, the plan also reflects our approach to project portfolio management. We have indicated in the plan basically four portfolios that we have, although the slide just is three here. That's the market information systems planning, our organizational development strategy, the crime prevention strategy, and there's also the infrastructure development strategy that's part of our approach of managing these projects within the project management framework that has been established within the department. As indicated in the last bullet, that all programs and projects within the portfolio operate on project management principles. The plan also reflects that the department has a service delivery improvement plan as required by the public service regulations and the white paper on transformation on service delivery. The DCS has identified four key services that form the basis of its service delivery improvement plan, or SDIP, and this plan then runs over a period of 3 years. After 3 years, it will be reviewed, but the plan that started in last year and that's still in operation reflects the following: that the department identified the following key services that it will focus on and improve on. And that is to manage access of service providers and other stakeholders into correctional centers, to manage the payment of bail and fines at correctional centers, to improve scheduling of visitations to offenders, and to improve telephone or switchboard etiquette at all service delivery points. And this is monitored by means of quarterly reports. Lastly, Chairperson, the strategic plan of the Department of Correctional Services reflects a summary of the HR, or the strategic human resource plan of the department. The plan ensures that the department meets its human resources needs in line with the imperatives of the white paper on corrections, and it is linked to the regional strategic HR plan in order to ensure synergy and integrated planning between national office and the region. And the strategic human resource plan informs the strategies of the departmental strategic plan. So it's merely a summary of the HR plan. The HR plan is available within the department. And then, just to conclude, Honourable Chair and members, the strategic plan of the department focuses on the work of the department over the MTF against the backdrop of budget constraints of 2009-10 and MTF allocations to ensure it systematically, incrementally, and realistically deliver on white paper on corrections in South Africa, which has been approached since 2005 as a 15 to 20 year undertaking. And we end our presentation with just a statement by our Minister of Correctional Services, who says that the successful implementation of this plan remains heavily dependent on effective partnerships, both internal and external, to realize the goals we've set for ourselves. We will continue to cooperate with various oversight bodies in their work. We also continue to value the support and monitoring of both the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee and the Office of the Auditor General in ensuring compliance in our work. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. We have from 11:15 to 12:45, 90 minutes. We are going to afford each Member of Parliament 10 minutes to interrogate uninterrupted and move on to the next member. That's how we'll operate. So we'll have at least 10 minutes. That should take us to about 12:45, and we'll see how we wrap up from there. For each member, just prepare yourself for 10 minutes. If you have less than 10 minutes, that's fine. If you have more than 10 minutes, you'll see how we accommodate you beyond 12:45. So that's how it's going to operate. I'm not sure if we have any order of priority. We could start on the one side and go to the other side. That's fine. But let me just kick off with the holistic, first of all. I'm sure members will get into the detail. I just want to look at the overall one. First, to start by saying the rest of this year, Parliament has passed the new Money Act. That means that we have the ability to change the budget. The second thing that I want to indicate is that if you present a strat plan to this committee, as you've done today, and you're unable to perform it because you've bitten off more than you chew, I think you're going to be in serious trouble. So those are just the general things. Now I want to get into the specifics. You see, Dr. Kutsia, your strat plan has highlighted lots of things that you want to do. Lots of things that you want to do. However, if I go to the financials that were presented on your first slide, ma'am, you know, if we take your slide on page 7, from this current financial year to the outer year, 2013, on all your projects with the exception of facilities, your increase is 11%. Now you take away inflation of 5% or 6%, it means your real increase is 5%. That's what it means. Your real increase is 5% from this year to the financial year. And I'm trying to marry that to the ambitions that Dr. Kutsia has. That's the first thing. The second thing on that very slide, ma'am, and this goes to the acting commissioner. You know, Commissioner, earlier on you said to us that you are really striving to move towards the white paper. That slide in the outer year continues to show that the increase in development, care, integration, corrections is 11% on average. On all those lines, it's 11%. Again, I'm saying that's a 5%. And what makes it more worrying for me is that, you see, it's 11%. Administration, for instance, is also 11%. But those are moving from a small base. So you can't argue to me that they are all equal because they're all 11%. The 11% in administration moves from a higher base than the 11% for development. And I'm saying that your strat plan has all these ambitious things that you're talking about. The reality is you don't have funding for that. If we take this model, you don't have funding for that. So somebody must talk to that. The final thing, if you go to your next slide, slide 8, I'm talking on the financials, and I'm just wanting to emphasize the point that I made. Not only don't you have finances, I'm wondering if you have the political will. if you look at the outer year, 64%, I'm talking about 12-13. Currently, you have 69% that goes to employment. In your outer year, you've got 64% going to employment, 15% going to assets, and that gives you a 21% for operations. I'm talking about the outer year. This year, as we're speaking, that same ratio gives you 23% for operations. So, in fact, your operations are going in the wrong direction. 23% of that budget is for operations this year. In your outer year for operations, it's 21%. If you take away the 15% for assets and the 64% for compensation, it's going in the wrong direction. And the acting commissioner tells us that we're in fact trying to move away from where we are towards the white paper. So those are the issues I want you to talk to. I want to then move just to slide 21, on that same one, slide 21 of the financials. And maybe my friend from Treasury must also prepare to respond to that one. The department comes to us and says to us, we're budgeting for an overdraft. That's what you're saying, isn't it? In essence, that's what you're saying. You're budgeting for an overdraft of 396 million. Treasury might have to explain to us what is the policy. You see, because if every department of government did that, does that mean that we are, whether we like it or not, going to increase the deficit of this country? Because that's what it means in essence. That's what it means in essence. Or is this just an exception in correctional services, that you are going to allow them to in fact budget for a deficit? So you might want to respond to those things. Let me just indicate that I don't think it's necessary to budget for a deficit, personally, Ms. Schreiner. The last point made by the doctor spoke about death faces. Let me just give you an example of where I think you can make savings. I'm not sure, and you must answer this. Somebody must answer this. You are going to build about 2,000. You will increase your bed spaces about 2,400. That's with the exception of Kimberley. In Mapumulo, you're adding 39 beds at a average bed space of 2 million rand per bed space. In Ceres, you're adding 262 beds at an average 269,000 per bed space. In Bergville, 29 additional beds or bed spaces at 1,344,000 rand per bed space. Now I want you to juxtapose that, Jenny, Ms. Schreiner. We've just finished completing Kimberley, which is supposed to be the benchmark. It's supposed to be the benchmark. This is what you guys have told us. That is the benchmark. All future prisons will be built on that. But the bed space for Kimberley is only 323,000. Now, the state of the art, you're saying to us, costs you 328,000 per bed space, and you go to Burba and you do the same sort of work for 1 million rand per bed space. You go to Mampumulo, you do the same sort of work for 2 million rand. So somebody must explain what are the reasons for these discrepancies, especially if we say that Kimberley is the benchmark, and if we should be doing that. So unless you can explain it, we can immediately make savings from those to cover up the 300 million rand. Immediately we can make savings to cover up the 300 million rand. The next issue from my side, I'm not sure who's going to answer it, but you see, this thing about offender labor, I don't buy the argument that the department gives us. that one is going to increase the security risk. Two, I don't know, Ms. Schreiner, you might have to explain to us what you mean when you say that you're going in that direction, but you need to relook the funding model. I don't know what funding model you need to do a bakery. I don't know what funding model you need to go to a school to ask them for the desk so that inmates can fix those desks up. What funding model do we need for that? I think there's sufficient work opportunities within the facilities that mitigate against this notion that they would escape if we give them other work. And at the same time, give them the necessary skills and also help in the school somewhere, in a hospital somewhere. So maybe you must explain why there is this thing that, look, we want to go the route of inmate labor, but there are these restrictions. I need somebody to explain that to me. On the issue of rehabilitation, ma'am. We all agreeing, all of us agreeing on rehabilitation. However, for me, the rehabilitation must be informed by what the individual has or doesn't have when he or she comes into the facility. And the only way I would know what he has or doesn't have is when I sit and do a sentence plan with him. Your strat plan says to me that by the year 2012, 2013, you'll only have done 14,000 of them. We're talking about 103,000 that are in custody already. Those other 80,000, how are we going to develop them if we haven't done a sentence plan? How would we know if I'm a carpenter, I'm a builder, where am I going to? So I'm saying your targets are not speaking to the white paper. Your budget is not speaking to your targets unless you're going to explain these things to me now. So I just don't. I would imagine the starting place would be to do the sentence plan before you can even rehabilitate. And then the last issue that I'm going to raise from my side is the HR deployment that you have. Moving from the premise that at least 69% of your budget is on HR, your admin department currently is 26% of your total. Your employee or salary, whatever, constitutes quite a bit of that. So that says to me that quite a bit of staff are there, or if they aren't in terms of numbers, then they are in terms of higher end value, in terms of people that are in your administration. Is it possible for you to move half of the people in your HR, on your headquarters, whether it's at Pretoria, or in other words, let me put it differently. Explain to me if it's possible to redeploy people from office bound to cold face bound. Take him out of the office and put him to guard the people that are in the security. And what is the difficulty of doing that tomorrow? What is the difficulty of doing that tomorrow? That's the question. Because you say we're going that route, but it will take us time and to get there over the short to medium term and to the long term. My question just is, if we went to headquarters today and identified people and said, if it's not the person because he's not properly skilled, but that post must move to security, what would the difficulty be? Because I don't understand why one department has, that admin, has 26% of the budget, and the other four that are supposed to be your core business, care, development, integration, combined, have 27%. Combined, they have 27%. One, which is administration, has 26%. I would have thought that we should have moved somewhere else. So those are the issues that I want to raise, and I'd like the department to respond, bearing in mind that your responses will inform our reports to Parliament. We're not necessarily going to debate these issues with you. We are putting the questions. They will inform our report to Parliament, and it will inform our position when we go to the debate.
So we're really not going to get into any sort of dialogue. Questions of clarity? Are we interpreting it correctly? And as members go on, they will get further into detail. So I was looking at it at a holistic and a global position. So you guys could explain those things to us, and I'm sure as members get in, they will zoom into the specifics, whether it's bed space or whether it is HR or whatever the case might be. I've taken 5 minutes. Jenny, you have 5 minutes to respond, and we'll move to the next person.
Oh, sorry,
you or any of your members here.
Good morning, and thanks so much, Chair. There are a number of questions that, or rather one or two really that I want to perhaps to attempt to explain. And one of those relates to the sentence plan issue, and the other to the offender labor issue, where I think the concern you had, Chair, was around what exactly is the model of financing that we're perhaps concerned about. Perhaps just attending to that, part of the work that we are essentially going to be doing going forward, and it has proven itself in a number of occasions. And to make an example of that, at the moment we are entering into a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Education in Gauteng. The commitment that the Department of Education is having is to say, can you maintain our schools by way of painting, upgrading, working on plumbing work and so on and so on, and cleaning our facilities. The commitment they are making is that will provide you with input costs. All you need to do is to provide us with labor. Now, that commitment has not necessarily been a commitment that has been forthcoming from the rest of others. We have had discussions with the Department of Public Works. Everybody agrees that we need to provide some bit of assistance in their public work programs, including municipalities, have had the same amount of discussions with them. What we are discussing with them is if we are to provide ourselves labor and possibly bear an element of input cost in the form of transportation of inmates, how do we go forward to ensure that you bear the cost of whatever input cost that will be coming in from there? And so going forward, we need to have long-term plans with them to say, this is the gamut of needs that you have as a municipality. And for us to be able to provide labor assistance to you, we will require a total amount of funding of this much. And so that amount will come from you. So we need to package this range of agreements just so that we are clearer ourselves about, based on the funding we have and the purpose of that funding, how far do we go? And I'm saying at the moment the commitment we are making to them is that we'll provide you with labor and perhaps the limited input cost of transporting the inmates, including prior training that will have provided the most paint, plumbing utensils, and so on that are going to be required for us to do that must come from you, and therefore you must. So it's going to take that bit of time in them working out their budget and drawing up schedule of work in respect of each and every one of the projects. The Department of Education and Housing is doing that. We have had the same experience with Johannesburg Metro, where they have committed themselves that will provide this level of training to your inmates, and this is the work that they will do subsequent to that. And so it's that time of engagement with different role players where they will ultimately look into their own budget and say, this is the commitment financial that we're going to be making for this and that and that and that project. And therefore package individual projects and provide the schedule of work, including the provision of whatever it is that will be necessary for each one of those projects. And that could be more or less the time. As I'm saying, we have an agreement standing now with the Department of Education in Gauteng. We've had the same set of discussions with the Department of Public Works. We've started a bit of work with the department, with Johannesburg Metro. That level of assistance has not necessarily been forthcoming in a number of other projects that you've seen inmates going up. You'll have to bear elements of those costs ourselves. The issue around the sentence plan, the commitment you're making is that because we're starting with a deficit here where we did not have sentence plan necessarily for quite some time in the manner that we want them to have, in the format that we want the sentence plan to have. And so the commitment we're making is that for every single person who has been sentenced, there must be a sentence plan. And then we start with that lot. And for every single person, 24 months before he sees or she sees a parole board, there must be a sentence plan. By and large, because no consideration for parole will be made unless we can demonstrate, or rather, by and large, because a person will not necessarily be paroled if there has not been any rehabilitation made in respect of that person. So what you now have is the 80,000 that you're talking about in between. Two things will happen in respect of this. One is that one of the things that I don't know if it reflects itself in the manner I'm going to say it in the strategic plan is that we're working on the backlog, which attends to the 80,000 that we're talking about. At the rate of every 3 months, the average at the moment is anything plus minus 8,000. And so we're closing up on that backlog. In instances where we miss this backlog, an element of 24 months is going to catch up with you prior to you having. And so in developing that sentence plan, two things will happen. One will be to take into account all sorts of programs that you have undergone prior to you having that sentence plan. And secondly, the sentence plan meeting the remaining requirements in respect of whatever needs that you'll have in the event that previously, you have been part of programs that did not necessarily address your need. If you see what I'm saying, is that the remaining 24 months will deal exclusively with what is absolutely necessary in the sentence plan. But I'm certain that going forward, within the second element of the backlog, we should be able to catch up with the 80,000 that you respect. There are other issue, Chair, is the calculation that you have made with respect to the cost per cell in respect of variety of this program. The cell in this regard is just but an element of the work that is going to be done there. If you look into a number of them, you'll see that it deals with upgrading work plus an additional 29 cells. And so that upgrading work is going to be a whole range of refurbishment work which is not accounted for. And so it may not be an easy matter of dividing 29 with a total allocation cost for that project if you don't take into account the rest of other upgrading work that will be done in respect of that specific project. And so perhaps what we can do, Chair, because I don't necessarily have that, is to calculate the cost per cell exclusively from the upgrading work, which I think is perhaps what we can provide you with in respect of the project that you have highlighted. Thank
you. Yes, ma'am. How are you going to fund? I'm interested in how you're going to fund all those projects if your real increase is 5% if we consider inflation. Briefly, is it doable? I mean, that's the question we're asking, because it will come back and bite you at the end of the day. Or am I misreading it when I do my calculations in the fashion that I'm doing them?
No, Honourable Chair, your calculations, you're not misreading anything. If you recall what I indicated before, was that mainly if you see the increase in our budget, the program, the step facility, that indicated that is mainly because of the compensation of employees increase. There is access to our own program seven for those who have new projects, new programs that are funded in terms of the capital work, but the other six programs currently over the 2010 MTF, there is no funding for new projects. For new projects, if you call what has been stated in terms of contractual obligations, part of the powers of the department, we maintain basically what we contractually bound to in terms of one of the slides that has indicated this as well. So there is no introduction of saying that this is a totally new project that we're financing over the 2010 MTF. So the assumption is that we carry forward what we contractually bound and what is human resource driven without itself to go and buy new equipment or new whatever. So that's the understanding. But
just before that is fine. No, before the budget speech, can you give me a listing of these projects that you are saying they won't be new, they will be projects? I'll tell you why, because I'm raising it in my debate. So when I raise it in my debate, I want to raise it being informed. If you think to me the existing projects are A, B, C, D, then I will raise what I think are gaps in that project. Because you can't say we're just going to fund our existing projects, but if they don't talk to reintegration or anything else, it's what I will raise in my debate speech that says these things are not workable. Because you have them, you're saying you're going to maintain them, when are you going to talk to these other things? So if I could have that before the 24th so that I could have an intelligent debate. Continue.
In terms of the administration program that you raised, the concern is kind of eating a larger portion of that. Program administration for DSERT currently, it is not a very clean program administration as you said in a normal government department. But included in that program administration allocation, it is the devolved funding that you are indicating on slide 9, I think, the 1.1 billion increasing to 1.4 billion is allocated as part of that particular program, and also the stores for the department, which is for the various issues, both in terms of the issue for inmates, in terms of the medicinal stores, in terms of also the kind of the small issues that you keep in the stores of the department. So that is currently allocated under program administration. We're still utilizing the concept of internal strategy. So we keep the bulk stock or strategic stock, and then as the particular program requisition, then we call it monopoly money, or then we take on the store we issue, and then the issuing program will then process the transactions. The other part that is currently centralized under program administration, it is the pool, the fleet of the department, the pool. It is sitting there. So essentially, if you minus all those kind of centralized posts, like for example the DPW funding, it is the list of all the office accommodation that you are renting in the department. So even if the community correction office, whatever, it will be under that program. The municipal charges for facilities is all under that program. That's something that is not a very big program administration.
You've got 1 second, otherwise I'm going to speed it other people. Is there anybody else that wants to respond to any of the issues that I've raised? Literally 1 minute before we hand over to the next member to take his slot.
Chairperson, let me briefly and then allow the treasury to respond to the issue. The issue of the migration of people out of head office. Part of the OSC process is precisely to get people to opt to move to either be centre-based or non-centre-based. We are currently in the process of managing the migration of people to be centre-based, and that is doing precisely what you are talking about. The critical element for us is we have a whole lot of posts within our national office and our regional offices, and even in our management areas, that have been correctional services posts, and ideally they should be public service posts. So that process of getting correctional officials to migrate to centre-based then enables us to identify that those that should be public service and fill them accordingly. The challenge that we have, and it's not something that prevents us from doing it, but it's something that we have to manage, is that as you are leaving those vacancies, we need to ensure that the risks attached to not having warm bodies in those posts are managed. Some of them are essential. Our risks particularly are in the finance and supply chain management and in the HR environment, particularly in relation to personal management and those types of issues. But currently that migration is taking place. And we will see that process moving forward.
Treasury?
Chairperson, you asked, is the department allowed to budget for deficit? No. Not allowed. No department is allowed for deficit. all government departments are experiencing the economic climate that we are in. And the president called upon all the departments to do more with that. I think there's one thing that I would like to correct that was created by, clarification around the OSD. The money that was given to the department was saying, go ahead, provide that. You can fund this within your baseline. So if the department was not able, so what department took to the bargaining chamber, has already been told that that must be funded within the baseline. But we have engaged with the department, I think around about December and January this year. But there are areas that we feel that the department can attend to regarding the baseline. Or there are certain positives which I think they should be centered in this deficit. The implementation of the OSD, part of the implementation of the OSD July last year, but to do away with overtime. And we believe that the overtime was one of the most challenging items in the department in terms of efficiency. Because we're not sure what are the correct number of people are supposed to work overtime, because data of empathy. If I can get more money, find that more people are work overtime and paid for that. So there are no challenges in terms of money to make sure that the exact number of personnel who work the overtime. We had the people working at the station, but going working overtime, but that doesn't get away with that. That's part of the responsibility. Last financial year, spending on overtime was $1.2 billion. And because the department has implemented this operating specific dispensation, we project that by the end of the financial year, spending could be about $300 million because of the 3 months, April, May, and June. Otherwise, would have been insignificant. This is one of the issues that they must take into account when they have to do the calculation. Because of the efficiency around, well, the OSD is more efficient than over time. And also the second point I would like to raise is that when we met the department around about February, we presented we gave them some red lights that they need to for example, we are projecting that by the end of the financial year, the overspending on goods and services is $326 million. So we ask if I can go and investigate. Yeah, it is the red line. It's something that we need to rectify. But we also project that this year, the department is going to underspend by $280 million because of the efficiencies, as I say, around the overtime. So what I'm saying is that it's correct for the department to present the most pessimistic, but I think I would rather prefer that they present the most realistic than that most pessimistic. So we still have to engage with the department to try to deal with this matter. But what I say is that those departments allow the budget for changes.
Okay. Treasury, we're going to record that. If the department comes back at the end of the year and says we've got condonement from Treasury to overspend, you're going to come and explain to this committee why? Because you're now saying to us there is a possibility not to go into overdrafts. You are saying to us that under normal circumstances, nobody is allowed to go into overdraft. If they do go into overdraft, they're going to say to us as a department, we're going to ask for Treasury to look favorably upon us. And I'm saying you're allowed to do that as government. However, me as a public representative, when that argument is put on my table, somebody is going to be accountable. That's all I'm saying. somebody is going to be accountable, because we cannot, on the one hand, say we're not going to budget for a deficit. We're having this pessimistic view, but if you work properly, it might not be possible. And I'm hoping that that's the case. However, if there's condonement from Treasury, then I really do think there's going to be problems. Because you can't come to Parliament and say, we don't allow, we're not allowing it. There's a possibility of it not happening. It's a hypothetical, because we've not reached the end of that financial year. I just think it's a very risky business to take. If you're coming to me and saying, well, we could fix it up, but... because the department is saying, on the basis of their threat plan, this is what it's going to cost the department. That's what you're saying, on the basis of a threat plan. If you don't get condonement, you're either going to overspend, or you're going to short-circuit some of the projects. And I can't afford that. I'm saying this to the department. So it's important that the Department of Treasury and the Department of Correctional Services deal with this matter.
The department, all the departments are required to plan based on the available resources. That's why I'm saying no department can plan above the budget. So if they come here and say you are projecting overspending of 396 million, that department needs to go back and try to rearrange the budget and present a balanced budget.
I agree. Thank you very much. We're not going to debate it any further. It's in your presentation to Parliament. It's probably in the hands of the media and everybody else. All I'm saying, if we want to correct this thing, you've got until the 25th to present me with a refined story, so that in my budget and also Mamelo in your budget, the Minister and the Deputy Minister, it is corrected. Because we are now hearing that nobody is allowed to budget for a deficit. I'm closing it at that one. Let's move with the first person, 10 minutes. Who wants to start? You want to start?
Yes.
You want to start?
Yes.
You've got 10 minutes and then we'll move to whoever else.
Thank you, Chairperson.
That includes the responses, right? 10
and
minutes.
Also, thank you for the presentation. I think, Chairperson, I'll make your 10 minutes because in some of your questions, you've already touched some ngenzeka nje ukuthi mhlambe some ngivanga kakuhle. Chairperson, I'm worried because I'll be debating about the social reintegration. But the budget does not prioritize rehabilitation program. I'm worried about that. And also the budget continues to ignore the vision of the white paper. Now, Chairperson, I want to know that in terms of social integration, as we know that the offenders during the post-release, they must stand for themselves. But if the budget is like this, I want to know, Chair, that how does the department intend to address the challenge faced by the offenders after release? And also, Chair, the department is not saying much about providing support to parolees and probationers, but rather than they want to increase policing of parole. Thank you, Chair.
Anybody that wants to respond to Ms. Ngwenya? No, everybody will have a chance. Ms. Ngwenya will interact for 10 minutes and then we'll go to the next one. Somebody wants to respond to that question from the department?
Perhaps the answer is in what I said earlier on about. I just want to make an example around this thing when we talk about offender labor. The example I made about Johannesburg Metro. In our partnership with Johannesburg Metro, they take approximately 150 of the parolees, they provide training to them. After providing training to them, they employ 25 of them. The Department of Health employs 35 of them instantly after that training, those that have passed the training program, and so on. I'm just making by the total of that 35, 150 was ultimately employed by one or other of government agencies after that training was provided to them. So I'm saying even in the absence of BICEC specifically, in partnership with other government departments, there has been a work that makes some semblance of a provision for parolees in the one hand. In the other, there are organizations that we're working with of parolees which seeks to coordinate the activities of the former inmates and look for opportunities of employment for them. We're working with those. We can't provide them with money, but we can be able to introduce them and endorse some of the programs that they are dealing with. The last thing I want to say is that in partnership with different NGOs, an attempt has been made continuously to try and get NGOs to work directly with parolees. If that work is not done by us, those NGOs have been contracted directly by the Department of Social Development to provide support to every single other person who has been in conflict with the law. So it may be that it appears in our budget, and indeed it's true, that the significant part of our budget is primarily for personnel and for monitoring. But there is a partnership out there with other government departments that seek to improve conditions of the parolees. And significantly, as I think has been indicated, much of what we have is going to be primarily directed towards payment of our personnel that facilitates provision of some of the services. So it's not entirely that our personnel do policing, but it's equally true that they facilitate access to other services that probationers and parolees must have.
Yeah, Chairperson, I'm the way I explain on a court. But I think, Chairperson, we need to get more, maybe in writing. You know, I'm staying in houses, and I'm leaving John's Bakery, and I'm expecting to get this report, Chair, in writing, since that I can also monitor, because we as members of parliament, is not to say for us is only to ask questions to the department, but we need also to assist and make sure that things are happening. Are we implementing whatever? So I would like Chairperson to get this report of a agreement with the city of Johannesburg in terms of the training. Thank you.
Baba Madata, your 10 minutes.
Yeah,
okay.
I will be very short. Just to go back to what you were saying about sentence flex. You know, I'm not convinced that in terms of the current planning, there will be much change about sentence plan, because essentially your argument was this time around there will be a sentence plan. But I mean, there has to be a sentence plan at any other time. So what I didn't hear precisely is what is going to be done exactly to make sure that there are sentence plans. I mean, I'll give you an example. Part of my answer, if I was in your position, would have been to improve the cooperation between your department and the Department of Police and that, because they contribute to the presence or absence of a sentence plan or to the quality of the sentence plan that you have. So surely then the plan must therefore speak to that. How are you going to rope in these two players to contribute to you having proper sentence? That may not be a complete answer, but to me that's partly the how we are going to make sure that there are sentence plans, in fact. Because it's a standing issue that there must be sentence plans, but the frustration is that it has not been happening. And you know the consequences of the parole and so on. Let me leave that. Secondly, in terms of the measurable objectives with regard to security, I mean, this is a fight we are going to continuously have, to, me and you. You meaning us. The issue of security of the inmates, even of the water, I must say, security is also important. If they are on the receiving end from the inmates. So the security of everybody within that confinement is critical with regard to assault and death, unnatural death. That's another debate, whether the unnatural, the natural are actually natural. That has been raised by inspecting judge, that some of the natural are not natural because there are loopholes as far as inquests are concerned. But that's another area we need to look at, whether the natural or unnatural death. But be that as it may, the target has to be zero. So that when we don't achieve zero, we acknowledge we are failing. It's not a failure in the sense that we are avoiding. It's a responsible failure that we are acknowledging that we still have a problem. Not because we are failing in the, I don't know how to put this, in the negative way of saying we are killing these people. But it's saying we don't accept assault and death that can be prevented. And as long as we have them, we are unhappy. We are reporting ourselves to that. But we are not pointing a finger as to we are responsible. We are saying this thing is happening and we don't like it, we don't accept it. And therefore we report it. It's not an audit of the nature of money that we have qualified audit. It's something you should be able to live with, unhappily live with it, as long as it's not addressed. Really, that's my argument to this. Because from a human rights perspective, you know, from a legal perspective, I just, it's chilling when you report that, okay, I'll have a target of, instead of 400 assaults, now I'll have 200 assaults. You can't talk like that. That's really my gripe with this issue. We can't condone it. And then the other issue is, although I'm not very good at this kind of things, I take a chance on these numbers. Very, I'm not good at numbers. But when I look at slide 27, 28 on the budget the issue, I think my question revolves around the HR again. I look at how many inmates are per center, according to this. Gauteng 200 and something, KZN 150 something, Eastern Cape 150 something, and so on, 109, 120. Then I look at the money compensation to employees, leaving the head office, that matter has been addressed, of top head office. Just coming to the rest, doesn't seem to me to really correlate properly in terms of the inmates in all these centers and the money spent on employees at these centers. It looks like to me the money spent on employees is more or less even across the region. Not exactly, but more or less. 1.2, 3, 1.2, 1.5, okay, 1.7, 1.9 is a bit high. But then when I look at inmates, the figures are actually much more, the difference is much bigger in terms of the distribution of inmates. I mean, let's take Gauteng 208,900. And then, that LMN is 101. So Gauteng is double that, if I'm correct, that number. But if you look at the employees' compensation, that's not reflected like that. something more or less like that. You get my argument. I'm not specific in terms of really comma what. But I don't see a good ratio of the payment of employees as compared to their responsibilities in terms of the inmates that they are handling. If the discrepancy is not even between necessarily only between the regions and the head office, but among the regions themselves, I think there is unfairness of how many people are there as compared to their responsibilities and how much they receive compared to, let's say, Gauteng, for example, in terms of the workload they have and how much they are paid and how many people are there who are working there, if you compare them with other areas. I think if you go smaller to a micro level, I think the minister did raise this, you might find it's a prison somewhere in Elliot Bay that has got 60 prisoners, but the wardens, compared to Mthatha or and so on, maybe more, but I don't know specifically. That's what I'm trying to talk about. That issue, I think, must be redressed. There must be, because we are having that problem that we have all accepted, all the NGOs who made presentations, all of them, the chorus is one. Too much money on personnel, but there is no improvement of rehabilitation and so on. So you were talking about the whole thing of reorganization. And I think this is the issue that must be addressed. Given that that's the situation where we have, how do we utilize these people where they are needed? So I'm saying, I'm picking up even at regional level, there is that discrepancy. Hey, and then the last issue is really an argument. You said earlier on in your opening, Commissioner, that your interpretation of the act resolution by the cabinet, the court, that of safety, you seem to interpret that that people must feel safe. The way it applies to correction is security. Correction must also take up security. I would apply it differently to corrections, that part of the people feeling safe in South Africa is to make sure that the inmates, the people who are under correction, do not come out and commit crime. We then bring us back to the white people, the bigger argument, that the money, we must shift it incrementally to attend to that issue of the soft skills. Thanks.
Department?
Let me start on the last one, because certainly if I was rightly interpreting outcome three and how it impacts on DCS, the stage was focusing on security, it certainly is not the correct interpretation, and I apologize if I've worded it badly. The critical element that we have brought in there are three legs. The one is remand detention, which is obviously part of improving the criminal justice system. The second is precisely increasing the access of offenders to rehabilitation programs, be they development programs, care programs, correction programs, and the third leg is the social reintegration leg, which is the parole issue, which is being measured by parole violations, precisely because as you measure parole violations, you're basically measuring how successful have we been in breaking the cycle of crime. So our own contribution to achieving outcome three is on those three legs, ensuring that remand detention is appropriately managed, ensuring that we improve the access of offenders to rehabilitation programs, broadly defined as covering development care and corrections programs, and thirdly, that we ensure that social reintegration is improved so that parole violations drop down. So I think that I'm just correct what they have phrased maybe on the first one. I think if I can just comment on the issue of the
mapping of our compensation of employees against our offender population. I accept fully that you're using it as a broad yardstick. It's a complex process because in different regions, depending on what your offender populations are, you've got different ratios. Because your ratio of inmate to member in a minimum, medium, and maximum varies. There are also complexities in some of the regions, particularly in the Eastern Cape, for example. You've got a lot of those really small centres in which you've got a way out of alignment in that ratio. And that's precisely where the Minister said we need to look at either enhancing those centres so they get up to a level at which they are able to be effective in terms of the member inmate ratio, or that we actually rationalise those processes. What we have identified and what we are in the process of addressing, and part of the seven-day establishment process has been addressing that, is that indeed we do have an unevenness of staffing levels across our, not only across our regions, but across correctional centres. And that process has been worked on by corporate services during the course of this year and informs the way in which we manage staff utilisation going forward. Hopefully the process that we are putting in place of focusing on staff utilisation will be able to address those issues and ensure that we address those processes going forward. So I thought that I should just add on those two issues.
Anybody else from the department, and then we'll move on.
No, Jane, quickly. I don't know, Jane, my daughter's argument is compelling around the indicators. I don't know how to answer it. Without coming across perhaps not intended. Yes, that for all intents and purposes we must have everybody having a sentence plan. Nobody must escape. Everybody must have a floor and a bed to sleep on. And so on. And so if the targets were to be anything like that, they will not be based entirely on the resource availability. And I don't know, we are assisted by Treasury. We debated some of these things at length around setting of targets and indicators and so on. And it may well be that an appealing approach is the one that is saying that provide everything that you're supposed to provide and don't do anything bad and therefore measure yourself against the failure.
No, continue. You protect.
It's a bit of a difficult way. I mean, it's a bit of a difficult way to do that thing, and I don't know if the strategic planning people can talk to it. But I must admit that the point he made about the sentence plans, including my responses to your questions earlier on, was perhaps inadequate. It was not an attempt to say almost everything. There are a whole lot of difficulties. Part of our sentence plan, as an example, are not inclusive of the programs. In some instances, programs that are rendered by the NGO. So there is still a lot around partnership that still has to be done. And so it may well include the Department of Social Development, the Department of Justice, the Department of Labor, and so on, because they too have programs that they are running within the department. And so I admit I was not as exhaustive perhaps. Thanks.
Chief, you've got 2 seconds before we move on.
Thank you very much. And not to belabor the point the Commissioner made, but we've also agreed on a task team together with Treasury to work on the staffing ratio. And and we've started work in that regard. That's what will be happening in this coming financial year. And the fact that the issue that the Commissioner, Acting Commissioner, has raised around the small facilities that require additional rationalization. There's work that is already being done in terms of regions assessing that and reporting to the center in terms of plan on how they're going to take that process forward. So we are integrating all these processes to deal with the issues of staffing.
Ms. Paliso, then it will be Ms. Bly, Ms. Nyanda, and then Mr. Fritz. We'll all have a chance. Ms. Paliso, your 10 minutes start.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson.
can the department explain to us the foreign nationals? It is not so clear for us. Is there any process or plan or negotiations in place or happening at this moment for the foreign nationals in the overcrowded facilities of DCS, or in the PPPs is never overcrowded, but actually DCS Correctional Center? Is there anything happening in this regard? And what is the plan of the department in terms of the Child Justice Act? Is this not implicating or impacting on the budget? Are there programs developed in line with the Child Justice Act, which are appropriate to the age of the child, in which address a specific offending behavior of the child at the root cause of the crime committed? Are there tools to measure the impact of programs on children and determine readiness of release? Because we are sitting with that overcrowded facility of DCS in which is very disturbing in Bloemfontein. And there are many awaiting trial juveniles, which also impact on the budget. More than 600 juveniles who've got who are just sitting there awaiting trial for 18 months, 1 year, 9 months. There must be something in place. There must be a time frame. There must be something to be explained to us. And is there any training offered to the officials who are working with these children? I thank you, sir.
Department?
Chair, at the moment as we speak, we've got a bilateral, we've got bilaterals going on with Mozambique, which will attempt to, amongst others, an agreement on mutual transfers of inmates. Next week, I think for practically the whole of next week, we're going to be having a meeting with Lesotho to analyze and look into the implementation of the memorandum of understanding with Lesotho that attend to the issues of foreign nationals within our facilities. We have had similar discussions with Zimbabwe last year. Some of these issues are matters that we need to be discussing with the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, because the government policy view, broadly speaking, is one that says we should not have inmate transfers between the countries. Our minister feels differently and a bit more strongly to say that within the SADC region we must have that. And so there is that part of an ongoing discussion. We are also having a protocol for foreign nationals awaiting deportation that are within our facilities, which we should, the ministers of foreign affairs, of home affairs and correctional services must sign to ensure that we don't have any one of those people within our facilities. And if indeed they are provisionally stationed there awaiting deportation, it must happen within 24 hours. At the moment, not in every case that happens. So around that is what is generally happening. At the moment, the Child Justice Act, Chairperson, coming into effect on the 1st of April. With regard to that, the provision of the Act, broadly speaking, suggests that there must be no child unless it's absolutely necessary in the correctional facilities. And so, as we speak, in every single one of our facilities, we are auditing whether in one of those children are meeting the requirements of the law Because the law says, unless prosecution can prove that there is a high chance of prosecution, and in that case, of it's not diversion, but the child is going to go to prison, unless prosecution can prove that. So we are auditing every single one of the children running towards the end of this month to be able to present to all other departments our views, and on the basis of which all of us must be able to approach the court and say, indeed, some of the children must then stay in correctional facilities. To that extent, the second issue we're trying to identify is really to say we need to designate facilities specifically for the children, because children are all over the show. And when they are all over the show, we're not going to have the capacity and the programs to train almost everywhere they are. But if we were to designate facilities which are predominantly housing children, in our sense that it will be exceptions, this thing that we're talking about, and therefore we should be able to resource those exceptions appropriately. The time towards the end of this month is too short for us to even consider training officials that will work on that. And it may well be that those officials that are predisposed in terms of their specific training, whether social workers and so, will be the ones that will be working directly with those children. But in general, I must say, I agree that we have way too many children below the age of 18. We are worried more about those below the age of 16 within our facilities. Our analysis at the moment, and we can provide you with a report to that extent, is that the predominant offense of the children that are within our facilities are aggressive crimes. Some of them have killed, which is regrettable. The second predominant offense is sexual offenses at these ages of 14 to 16. And so there may well be higher chances. This I don't know until we have finished this audit. There may well be higher chances that some of those children are ultimately going to end up having to stay with us. And I'm saying until we have run that audit, I'm not going to be able to say more with certainty at the moment. But we are getting ourselves ready, for the implementation of the Child Justice Act effective from the 1st of next month.
Happiness, ma'am?
Thank you, Chairperson.
You've got 5 minutes.
Thank you, Chairperson. The program allocation, program administration, DCS is mainly relying on consultants. What informs that? And why is there no progress or minimization of these consultants, because that is also impacting on the budget. And coming back, Chairperson, to the juveniles, the budget doesn't indicate or give us a clear stipulated costing of these awaiting trial juveniles. I hear what Mr. Muteki is saying, but there is no indication of what do we spend on this awaiting trial juveniles in our correctional center. I do understand what he's explaining about some of these children did commit serious crime. No, I won't argue with you about that one. But I'm talking about this, those who are just stealing apple or taking S from someone who is awaiting trial for 18 months. And there is a budget for that head. It's head count, and every head is costing us in the budget. Thank you.
The department. You got 2 minutes, 3 minutes, otherwise you're going to run out of time. Anybody choose to answer that one?
Chairperson, perhaps if I can touch on the issue of the consultants in the administration program. I think the critical element of the consultants in the administration program lies in the IT budget. And I think that part of what is required in any IT budget, because it's a project-driven budget. So we have an MISP that is developing a particular information system. It's a short-term process in which one employs service providers or consultants for a particular time period in order to deliver that particular project. So there's an element of the IT environment that is of necessity, not permanent employees within the department. In particular, because one cannot necessarily employ on an ongoing basis people who have the expertise to be able to develop whatever it is that the systems of the department needs. I think where the problem comes is where those consultants in fact are doing responsibilities in which we should have permanent employees in the department. So where they are dealing with issues that should in fact be being done by permanent consultants. Our challenge in some instances has been to be able to recruit and retain the expertise within that environment, given that the salaries in the IT industry are quite significantly bigger. But it is an issue that we are concerned about and are managing that process and trying to explore in consultation with future ways in which we can bring down that particular aspect. So I think that we are vigilant on the issue of consultants and trying to ensure that we are not using consultants where in fact we should be having permanent employees where we can recruit and retain. The issue of the remand detention budget. I mean, short of doing a calculation of what the cost of accommodating any inmates and extrapolating that against the number of juveniles, our remand detention budget is integrated into the rest. It's not at this point disaggregated in our budget. We are moving towards a point through the remand detention project in which we will establish a remand detention budget program that will then enable us to have a look at that money. But at the moment, the money for the remand detention is within the other budget. But I'm sure that on the basis of a generic costing of what it costs us to accommodate an offender or an inmate, we would be able to give you a general figure of that. But you won't see at the moment in our budget a remand detention.
Ms. Bly, you've got 10 minutes.
I think in your open remarks you have touched on the issues that maybe I wanted to also touch on. But mine is on rehabilitation. I would like to know, out of the 78% budget allocation for this program, which goes to compensation of employees, how much goes to compensation of associate staff and how much goes to professional staff? And another thing, Chairperson, is another thing of this remand center. How far are they appealed from the court? You know, the reason why I'm asking that question, you will take maybe inmates from Baltimore from Salvo to Baltimore. Now, I want to know the defense where the centers are placed.
Any more, Ms. Bly? Are those only two? You can follow up later if you need to. Thank you, Department. Yeah. Department, put your mic off, please, Ms. Bly. Just put it off there. Department, does anybody want to respond to that?
Chair, we're not going to be able to provide the Honourable Member with the information per se around how far are the facilities away from the court. At the moment, we have 11 designated facilities, and we can provide you with a table that shows you of the 11, where are they, and how many courts are they saving. As an example, Johannesburg is one of them, and saves is approximately 24 courts. So we can provide you with a table that demonstrates the number of courts that each one of the 11 facilities is serving. On aggregate, 11 of them have got approximately 60% of our ATD. So we can provide that table before the end of this week.
Ms. Bly, any more?
Yeah.
Yes, carry on.
Thanks, Chair. A follow-up question on that. On your presentation, Chair, on page
on page 28. Slide, sorry, slide 28. On facilities, the region head office, I would like to know the 1647278. What is that? What is it budget for? What is that allocation for? Slide 27.
Are you with them? They don't seem to be with him as well. They got it. Yeah? Respond?
Thanks, Chairperson. The 1.6 billion is not indicated. It is the under facilities, it is the two existing triple P's allocated, the contractual obligation, plus the capital works program, because as I said, centralized. So all the projects, the new facilities, the renovations and all that, the capital work program, all of it is centralized under head office. It's not different from commission, but it's for facilities, different facilities.
Mama Mnyanda. Use another one. The wire is off there, yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is, what informed the decrease in the budget allocation of the program by 80 million from 1,584 in 2009 and 10 to 1,504 this year, 11? That's my first question. My second question, which service delivery has been compromised in this program by the budget reduction? My third question, at present, how many offenders are on ARV? Who is paying for this? Is it the department or the health? My last question, expenditure is expected to grow in the average annual rate of 27.7% to 3.5 billion in 2012-13. This is mainly to the allocation of additional funds for the construction of 4 new correctional centers. We had this Kimberley that had their own budget, but it ends up having more money on top. What criteria did you use for these 4 prisons, these new? Are they going to have be allocated only this 3.5 million or more than that? Thank you, Chairperson.
The department.
Thank you, Chairperson. Madam, we have about 6,500 offenders who are receiving ARV treatment across the different regions. The money that's been allocated, the departmental funds are being used for the provision of ARV treatment. What we are currently working on is to engage with the Department of Health to look at ways in which the Department of Health can actually facilitate in providing the ARV treatment to the offenders. So we're going to have to work in a very close collaboration in some provinces and regions. With the Provincial Department of Health, there has been cooperation, like on the Free State Northern Cape. But depending on their budgetary situation, there comes a point where the department then has to take over the payment. Sorry, thank you. So in terms of the majority of the spend, it comes from the Department of Correctional Services, but we're working towards getting into a relationship with the Department of Health on that. Thank you very much.
Any more input from the department?
Sorry, this is the question. How much?
Continue.
How much is it? We've allocated an amount of 16 million for the ARV treatment. That was brought down to 10 million. We've up to now spent about 7 million on ARV treatment. Thank you very much.
Mam Nyanda, you want to say something, Mr. Mateki?
Yes, just to say that the allocation for the new facilities is meant to provide for the initial capital outlay. The sense is that on the 1st of April that year, the facilities will have been completed, and so we'll be making our first payment that year, but that will not be the only payment. Going beyond that, MTF allocations will be adjusted to make provision for payments required for those facilities going forward.
Any more follow-ups, Manyanda? Your mic, please, ma'am.
I ask a question. Which service delivery area has been compromised in this process by the department?
Department with the question?
Just to sound at SDS. Clarity question, but it's not clear which budget program we are talking about in relation to
okay.
Ms. Mutti, could you address the issue? The question is, in terms of the budget reduction within care, what is the impact on service delivery?
Chairperson, to you, I think the impact is going to be, as Ms. Mareka has indicated in her presentation, we are going to have to cut down on the provision of services to bare minimum in terms of the provision of the nutrition, in terms of the provision of care of the officials. So we obtained this, sorry. So it's going to have to be cut across.
No. Let's have a. Yeah. Mam Nyanda, did you follow the response?
Yes, I did. No? But it's not clear. If you can elaborate further, I can.
Please put your mic off, Mam Nyanda. Yeah? Nobody go? They will respond, yeah.
Okay. Chairperson, perhaps if I can assist. In the areas that we had prioritized as areas in which we would need to ensure budget allocation, the care services are part of those. So the issues of nutrition, the issues of health, the issues of clothing and bedding, those are issues that we had to prioritize because those are essential delivery points for the inmates. So in relation to the provision of those services, there should be a minimal impact because those are part of what we have identified as key areas for the allocation.
Let us not debate. No, I'm with you. I'm trying to help you, Mark. You see, earlier on somebody said that the worst case scenario is that we're not going to do anything new. We will stay where we were. Now we are told that there will be 80.1 million rand less in that thing. The question that we are asking, if the status quo is retained, then at least the budget should have been retained because there's not going to be a reduction in funds for services. If the budget is reducing, then it means there's going to be something that's going to be compromised. And I think that's the question that Mam Nyanda is asking. Is that the correct interpretation? If it is the correct interpretation, please explain to us which service is going to be compromised. If it's not the case, you can say so. But remember that we said earlier on, what you say today is going to be what we measure you against and what we will motivate for your removal from this department. Okay. Yeah.
Thanks, Chairperson. Maybe what I need to clarify in terms of what I indicated before is that there is no new project. There's a project that is new,
yeah,
that is funded in 2010, but that will continue with what you contractually obliged in terms of the existing project. So there's no project that you're contractually obliged to service providers that you're killing. But in terms of other services, indeed there is a cut. If you look at the goods and services across, if you look at care, if you look at development, for example, care in 2019 was 922.3, it's going down to 799 in 2010. Development 120 going down to 110. Indeed, there is that, but we're not able, given the allocation for 2010, to actually.
No, we're hearing that, Ms. Mareka. I think the question is in the care one specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have an idea which of those that you cut in? And we're not going to say we agree or disagree, as long as we know. If you say to us that people are no longer going to have a jersey in winter and they'll have to do it out, whatever the case might be, so that we have an indication what is the impact of going down by 80 million rand? If you can't give it to us now, it's fine. Just give that to us before the 25th so that it can be incorporated in our debate. Is that okay?
We request that, Chairperson.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. It might mean that people are not going to get raincoats anymore, or what they're not going to get 3 tablets, they'll get 2 tablets, whatever the case might be. Mamnyanda, are you happy? Thank you very much. Mr. Pritz, 10 minutes start.
Thank you,
Mr.
Chief. I just want to preface my questions with the question around facilities, and I see 1.7 for the financial year of 2009-10. I'm on slide 18. And I want to ask this in a broader context, the question of facilities. I also see a whole program of Paul, East London, Clarksdorp, Nigel, and I know Bramsley, and I know Sierras, and I also know that Kimberley is finished, and I don't know whether the place is 100% occupied. The question I want to ask, and I think it's a fundamental question in terms of a strategic direction that we are going into, whether the building of new correctional centres is the way forward. And in the same time, we have a task team on overcrowding, Mr. Chair. Now, you know, we have 10 task teams over the years, and I don't know what new. I think we're just wasting extra money with all these task teams, because surely the commissioner informed us as to measures that we can take to reduce overcrowding. We have 50,000 awaiting trial people. We look at the specific issues around bail protocol. We look at issues of sentenced people with 24 months and less. I know there's the whole amnesty that we would like to get more information, I think, the committee around that. But there are those kind of very, very specific, there are diversions. There's a whole lot of protocols that one can apply to reduce overcrowding. I'm not sure whether we're going in the right direction, because I can tell you, and I can almost bet you, Mr. Chair, that Kimberley will take a long time to have 100% occupancy. And I want to see when Kimberley is going to be filled with 3,000 inmates. That's the problem. While at Portsmouth, the awaiting trial and the remand centre at Portsmouth will always be full. Because here it's a different dynamic. It's just a different logic. And it fails me to see how people plan in such a skew way constantly. So that is the question. And my question I specifically want to ask is, when is it anticipated that construction of the PPPs will start? When exactly? What is the date for those constructions of those PPPs? If you are now going that route, when are we going to start the construction? The funding for PPPs we know of 1.4 billion kicks in 2012-13, but payments for PPPs only kicks in when actual inmates populate the prison. It takes plus minus 2 years to construct the facility. So when are we going to start that? That's the first question. The second question I want to ask is, and I think the Commissioner was incredibly eloquent with the whole idea of the non-custodial sentences, and we're just asking what happened to all those findings of all those task teams over the years. It would be interesting to know, because we have a new task team that's going to visit all these centres, and it's huge taxpayers' cost again. And I don't know what new they're going to come up with. So it would be interesting to look at that. And then thirdly, I think one thing that no one tells us here, Mr. Chair, around OSDs and seven-day establishment, is that the problem doesn't lie with a new career passing of rehabilitation. We might get people at work, they're absent over weekends. There's massive chronic absenteeism in the department. And they're not telling us how they're going to deal with the absenteeism. It's fine, fantastic to say, okay, rehabilitation and this is security people. But I'm telling you, we have people not at work. They're just not at work. How are we going to deal with that? A problem of getting people to come to work. My last question, I just want to know, and I think some other member of this committee asked the question, what exactly does a program mean, a rehabilitation program? Because we have incredibly high figures for social workers, work sessions that was done with social workers, anger management, pre-release programs. What exactly does a program mean? Do we look at the outcome of a guy who graduates, who's now literate, who can sign his name and write, or do we look at how many people participated in the program? That's the first question. How can we then have all these nice programs if we have this fire that is hurt, and I've said it to this committee this morning, social workers on contract everywhere has been, the contracts are ending at the end of the month. So isn't this double speak, you know? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Department. Department?
No, thanks. Perhaps just to be more specific, Kimberley will be full as of June this year. Yes, we will carry on building facilities because you have said the current ones we have don't meet the specifications required by the white paper. As we speak, the minister has instructed us to evaluate whether the smaller facilities, the ones I think that Mr. Madad was speaking about earlier, whether those facilities serve, are economic to run. And as a result of which, when that answer is provided, the ultimate conclusion may well be that if you decide to close them, you are going to need extra facility, or alternatively, if you decide to upgrade them and increase their size to meet the optimum size facility, that you're going to carry on with construction. Yes, again, the minister has made the policy statement that the facilities we have are not suitable in almost every respect for women, and therefore she has given an instruction for a model around facilities to for women exclusively to be looked into. And lastly, that you must look into cheaper ways of construction of facilities. We have constructed CSIR to assist with researching and providing answers in respect of some of those things that I've talked about, and are hoping to have a turnaround of 3 months around an answer, both in terms of the model optimum or for women and the cheaper building facilities. And so indeed, building of new facilities is going to carry on, either as a replacement or upgrading or altogether new ones. We can't with any certainty at the moment yet say when is the first brick going to be laid, for a simple reason that the validity period of the current bid ends in November, by which date we should have processed or adjudicated those bids. Beyond that phase, it's going to be a process of negotiations, and depending on our agreement or not, it's difficult to ascertain a specific date to that extent. But what we know in terms of our financial planning is that completion of the same must be done by 2013-14. I think and rehabilitation is the product of number of interventions, whether it's around development of the offenders, direct intervention on the basis of the offences they have committed, the needs that they have, and fit the purpose programs. And sometimes can be a coincidence. We have seen those where people all of a sudden have become completely religious and look differently at acts of crime. And so it can be sudden. Sometimes people lose their beloved ones and realize that in one form or the other, their own actions. And so it can be a product of multiple set of things, including sports and recreational activities and so on. And so we have packaged every single one of those things together for us to define what the product of rehabilitation would be. But a sentence plan for individual inmates is meant to package individual packages of programs around one single inmate and deliver rehabilitation in that form. We have not been able to, and it's an international problem, measuring rehabilitation. We have not been able to develop a tool of our own at this stage. Thanks.
If I may, on the follow-through on the rehabilitation, I think Mr. Fritz is raising a very important issue. Because when we look at correcting the offending behavior and also providing services, the outcomes-based approach becomes very important. What is the value that we're going to get for the input? So even the programs that we bring in, that the NGO is bringing, we also quality assure those programs. In the past, we used to have programs coming in where people come in and just provide programs, and we're saying we need to fundamentally shift from that. And that's in line with the white paper to say, what will the outcome of this program be? It's not about just sending people to a number of sessions, but what is the value add in line with what Mr. Mutyeki says? We have a sentence plan, but this program, if the person goes through it, what will be the outcome? So I think that's a fundamental shift on our focus. It's not just input, but the outcome becomes very significant. And we are looking at ways, you have heard there will be the reoffending measurement tool that we are looking at developing, because that will also look at how effective are we. Given and taking into account that when an offender goes out on parole, there are circumstances outside that are beyond the department's control, but what can we do within that can help to help that individual to develop, to prevent or minimize reoffending? I think those are important areas that we're engaging and embarking on. Thank you.
Mr. Fritz.
Thank you, Steve. I don't think that answers the question around efforts or measures to deal with the absenteeism. And I don't expect an answer, but I hope people take note of that. I just want to make that point, because, you know, wherever you go into, I visit prisons, I don't know about other people, but you find two people on a section for 300 people, and in many instances a woman and one man. So I'm just making that point. The other point I want to make, and it goes to what Ms. Magwenya said earlier around reintegration. Perhaps we must change the kind of program's name about reintegration to something called monitoring or policing outside, because there's nothing about reintegration. It doesn't mean reintegrating people into our society. It's about checking whether they reoffend. In fact, it's more problematic with community corrections going, and a man comes from work 1 minute late and he gets rearrested for parole break. I'm just making the point. I think perhaps we mustn't play. I think the words we use here must mean something. Must mean reintegrating people into a society. And I want to use the Cuban model, and people can come ask me about the Cuban model, a very effective model where the community absorbs people back from prison. So thanks, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, that's a follow-up, Chairperson. I think another issue I've not touched on anyway is the rehabilitation of the warders. You know, what are we doing to rehabilitate? Don't we have a lot of problems with discipline? Alcoholism, for example. One thing, when I was at school, you knew about warders. What was the drink issue? And I don't know whether it's the years of association with bad people. So that issue, I think we need to hear about it. Maybe there's a broader issue on that. The discipline issue. It's a problem because we have identified that the people are struggling to do the job that they're employed to do. So what is the strategy of helping the people to be more productive? And then on that issue of the last one.
Yes, sir.
On that issue of the bidding, now you have indicated that the minister wants cheaper methods. Has that been factored in into a new criteria of when people are going to be bidding to do construction? Are we clear now what kind of construction we want them to do so that they bid accordingly? And that's a misunderstood what you are talking about.
We will respond to those. Just let's add two more because we have to round up. The time is up. On page, I don't know if you've got the you've got it. Let me refer you to page 399. No. Is it different? Okay, let me talk to it. Under security, you're talking about x-rays, installing biometric x-rays in 16 correctional facilities by 2012-2013. You know about the x-rays in the facility? There's two questions. I raised this earlier on, and I've kept on harping on it, Ms. Mareka. And you've kept on saying that, hey, we're not going to do anything new. We're not. It's fine. But you talk about 16 correctional facilities that will have biometric access and all those high-tech things. The first question that I want to ask, are you there? Are we together? Under security. The first question that I want to ask is, on what basis did you choose these 16? I don't even know where they are. On what basis we said in 16 sites? We've got, what, 300 prisons? 200 and something prisons. On what basis did you choose those 16, and how are you going to fund them? What was the logic? I mean, I heard from the minister or somebody that Westville, for instance, is not included in that list. Now, on what basis do you choose doing these things? I would assume you'd go for those that are a high risk. I'm saying that's what I heard. It might be wrong. But somebody needs to tell me which 16 they are and why did you choose those 16 and not the others around those facilities. Then, around your, on the next page, I think it is, Yeah, the next page, or I don't know when you talk about your page, but we're talking about tracking devices. 12 facilities were targeted. You couldn't procure because there was something with CETA. It's been divided into two. The first phase covers identification and facial recognition. Will be implemented in 17 correctional facilities by the end of March. That's what this book says. That by the end of March, 17 facilities by 2010 will be completed. I just want to find out if that is the case, or if that again was some stuff. Have they been implemented, those things? And then you say the second phase, which includes tracking of offenders inside correctional facilities, will be done by 2012-2013. So somebody can answer the question of, on have those 17 been done by the end of March? We're 2 weeks away from the end of March. Will they be done by the end of March? Which 16 facilities have been identified for the access by biometric, and what was the rationale? Have you rehabilitated inmates, not inmates, warders and so on? Those are the last questions. We are exactly 2 minutes before one. And also your closing remarks, Commissioner, if you have anything. Again, I want to reiterate, what has come out here will inform how we debate, which issues we're going to focus on. And your minister will respond at the end of the day, because the normal procedure is we raise issues and the minister would either elaborate. So it's helping all of us. Thank you very much.
Thanks, sir. All right, thank you very much. Not that we are competing, but I think we owe Mr. First an explanation on the matter that he raised, and he raised them first. No, the issue of the absenteeism is being monitored. And the 7-day has just been recently implemented. And as well, we've got a task team that does analysis. We get reports on a continuous basis and we raise them with region. I think it is a management issue that we need to deal with and devise strategies to deal with that. But we are managing that. And it's one challenge amongst the other challenges that we face because of staff shortages. But it shouldn't, we shouldn't be faced by it, because the benefits that we envisage to get from the implementation of the 7-day are larger than just the challenge we are facing of the absenteeism of staff. I think it is a management issue. It's a matter that the acting commissioner touched on around the utilization of staff. That the strategy working around on the utilization of staff will be touching on those things as well, and we are getting statistics. But where we have where we have information, we refer it back to regions to explain why certain issues are arising out of that. So I think it's being managed, and we would want to give it time
and see after the 12 months of implementation what value has government and the department really received from the implementation of the 7-day and the two ship system, which we believe there are huge benefits that we are going to derive from there. And the second issue on the rehabilitation of officials, we've got a strategy and that deals with the health and wellness of staff. We've got a health risk manager that deals with issues related to their health and on how that monitor ill health, incapacity leave, and so on. So we do get reports on a quarterly basis. It's an external health risk manager that assists us in that regard. So based on that and based on other programs.
No, continue. I'm sharing, Mr. Matasa, yeah. Don't interrupt us.
So based on that and also based on other mechanisms that we gather information around matters of discipline, I think we've presented that. We are analyzing the statistics to see how serious the problem is. And we've got a lack of resources that we must put up front on some of the programs that we would want to implement with the strategies that we have now on staff. We put it in the strategic plan, but it's going to be only within the means that we have. We are not going to be able to get to the extent we really want to get in terms of the health and wellness strategy. And I think we are one of the departments that other departments are beginning to learn from when it comes to the health and wellness of staff. The situation may be observed differently, but it's not as deep-seated as it may be observed, because the statistics show us differently. They don't show us, and the analysis that we are seeing.
That's fine. That's fine. We'll debate the statistics. We can show you that people are absent from work many, many days. We can show you that people take 4 days off on this yeah. two shifts. They take their couple of days off, and then they don't come to work because they're on sick leave. You think that is a wellness program that people can learn from? Something we could debate all these things, and we will raise them in our debate. I'm not asking you to respond, sir. I'm just saying that be aware that we have different views from other people that give us different issues. Ms. Ryan, not your closing remarks, but if you want to respond to anything else, because before you do your closing remarks, I'll ask Treasury and the Auditor General if they want to comment on anything, so that when you close having incorporated anything from Treasury and the AG. But if there are questions specific, I'll allow you to do that now.
Chairperson, I just wanted to add one dimension, because we are acutely aware of the issues that you're raising around whether staff, one, when they're on duty, are working effectively, and secondly, whether in fact people are taking leave appropriately, or whether there is an abuse of it. And I think that part of what we are also looking at is the entire area of the organizational culture of the department. Part of it is the issue of staff utilization as has been determined, and the management of the restroom system, but part of it is an organizational culture issue. We have got an organizational culture project. We have done a pilot. It has reflected back to some serious challenges. It is an issue that needs to be taken forward. So I think that we are very with you in the understanding, recognition that there is a major problem. It needs a multi-pronged approach. The wellness is part of it, the stress is part of it. The other elements are the morale and the actual utilization of staff, and the managerial responsibilities and supervision responsibilities in that regard. I just thought that I should add that before I think I'm handing to Mr. Chair,
with respect to the issue tracking devices, we've developed an internal software, and we've got all the equipment necessary for doing this work for all the 17 facilities. Whether we'll do it by end of March may well at the moment be have been affected by an incident of escape, which you may well know about in Western Cape. We've had to take them out of court and prioritize
Westville.
That incident has forced us to move every resource we have around the specific program into that area to prioritize it. So it may well be that it may affect the program of completing before we have 66 facilities where we have installed access control. We have completed an audit of the integration of the technologies now through CSIR. And the point about X-ray scanners, the X-ray scanners was the third leg of our technology upgrade. They have conducted an audit, and amongst others, they have found that both the utilization and availability, utilization where they exist and availability of X-rays, it continues to be a serious security risk. So our priority is going to be to complete the third leg of the technology plan, and therefore the X-ray scanners are going to be in the very same 66 facilities where the access control. And so it's going to be a matter of moving forward until we've completed all the 66 facilities.
AG's office.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We thank you for inviting us to this discussion. That gives us an opportunity to also understand better what the budget of the department is all about and what the plan is all about, so that we can plan our audit procedures for the next year as well. We would just like to remind the department also that with the possibility of over expenditure, the necessary approvals have got to be obtained because the people are audited as unauthorized expenditure if the percentage exceeds the budget. And also when it comes to the reporting of performance information, just make sure that the targets are specific, are relevant, are time-bound, in other words, comply with the framework for reporting the performance information. Thank you, Chair.
Treasury.
The Chairperson, thanks very much also for inviting us to come to this committee. I think perhaps when we are considering all these factors, we must take into account that correctional services are saying they're downstream departments, so to say, in the sense that they are upstream departments and their performance affects correctional services. And therefore, what is happening in justice, what is happening in police, will affect correctional services. And the justice and crime prevention and security cluster is working to, for example, to deal with this, you know, case backlog, awaiting trial, detaining state for up to 7 years, sometimes in prison, all those issues. Well, that is where the fire pass, you know, to be trying to make sure that people do not stay in correctional center more than necessary. So we need to improve the performance of our court. So there's a lot of work being done there. And also the people who are in correctional center because they are poor. The people who are in correctional centers because they can't pay the bail, etc. So there's work that can be done. Although it's not part of the strategy of the department, but strategy of the cluster, which we need to take. Once those improvements, I can see the trend that there is improvement. Once those improvements, you know, come to fruition, I'm sure the burden that correctional services is experiencing will be lessened, so to say. And also, I remember about 6 or 7 years ago, the growth rate in the number of inmates was going up at a high rate. I think last time it was about 190,000. It was something that is going to over, go over 200,000. But it's something that the department did like to stabilize the rate of inmates to about 160,000. The action that we are taking by the department to also help to improve, you know, the pressure on spending, you know, the term that they use, the testing of prisons, where they release certain type of prisoners without affecting the security of the community. Those also improve the pressure of the department, as well as the task that has been appointed by the minister to also to look at all the prisoners, etc. I'm sure we'll also try to cook. So what I'm saying is that if all of us, not only in correctional services, I mean justice, police, but it also social development, etc. To also improve the well-being of our people, because around about 75% of the crime in South Africa is social crime, it's about social issues. So as we are working, that is the best, from the side of our department and the government as a whole, we continue working together with the Department of Correctional Services to try to improve the situation. Thank you.
Ms. Rana?
Thank you very much, and thank you for the engagement that we have had today. We will certainly, there are various issues that we've been through, and I'm not going to summarize them. You've asked us for further information or analysis, and we will do that and get it back to you ahead of the budget vote, so we can enhance the quality of the budget vote debate, which we do look forward to, because it adds value to us in terms of the way going forward. I think I want to close off by reflecting on the issue of the what is being called a deficit, because it's certainly not a situation in which the department is saying we've got a deficit and we're leaving it there. I think what is important to flag for the Portfolio Committee, so there can't be any confusion on it, is that having received the 2010 MTF allocation letter, the Budget Committee has sat down to look at how we reprioritize our budget within that process. And we've done that in consultation with Treasury. Our initial response to Treasury indicated where we thought that we could reprioritize and be able to find money that could be reprioritized, focusing in that particular element on dipping into capital works allocations. In the interaction with Treasury, Treasury said leave the capital works allocations, and we then came back to the situation that we have now in looking at the process of trying to reprioritize within other areas. But I think I really want to emphasize strongly that this is not a situation in which we said we've got a deficit of whatever and we're going to overexpend by that. The key element, and I think it's been what our budget committee has been very seriously seized with since the end of the first quarter of this financial year, and it will continue right the way through, is a constant process of tracking very carefully our expenditure trends, looking at reprioritization and being able to ensure that we do not land up where there is over expenditure. What we have said to ourselves and what we're saying to the Portfolio Committee is that we are in a situation in which the combination of the recession and the cost of the OSD has put us in a real budget pressure. But there is absolutely no intention from this department to land up where we say, because there's budget pressure, we're going to overspend. Our processes through the short-form exercises are consistently trying to reprioritize and to make sure that we're able to, one, deliver on strategic objectives and at the same time avoid the over-expenditure. So I hope that can clarify the approach of the department. We're certainly not sitting and planning for a deficit. What we're saying is that on the basis of the allocation and our current situation, that's the reality that we then have to manage to a point at which we are able to avoid the over-expenditure. So I hope that has clarified that issue adequately. And it's obviously something that during the financial year we would be engaging with the Portfolio Committee on, because it's part then of our community. But I think from our side, the value add that we've had from the questions that have been raised and the direction that has been given has certainly assisted us, and we look forward to a vibrant and healthy budget that features.
Meeting has adjourned. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.